It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Oh, we have a great panel for you. Owen Thomas is here from the San Francisco Examiner. Glenn Fleischman from The Incomparable. And from Windows Central, the editor-in-chief, Daniel Rubino, will talk about Microsoft's build, some big AI announcements there. We'll talk about Elon Musk's disaster and what happens when your lawyer uses ChatGPT. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT. This Week in Tech. Episode 929, recorded Sunday, May 28th, 2023. Soused women and $4 potatoes. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ACI Learning. IT skills are outdated in about 18 months. Stay ahead of the curve and future-proof your business competitiveness with customizable, entertaining training. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit. For more information on a free 2-week training trial for your team. And by Worldwide Technology. With an innovative culture, thousands of IT engineers, application developers, unmatched labs, and integration centers for testing and deploying technology at scale, WWT helps customers bridge the gap between strategy and execution. To learn more about WWT, visit wwt.com/twit. And by Lookout. Whether on a device or in the cloud, your business data is always on the move. Minimize risk, increase visibility, and ensure compliance with Lookout's unified platform. Visit lookout.com today. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we covers the week's news. And we covers it today with three excellent panelists. Glenn Fleischman joins us. From Parts Northeast, he's the editor of a brand new
Northwest.
Book, Kickstartered Northwest. What did I say? Northeast? Crazy. I was thinking of you in Maine. You're going to Maine to print your book.
Due north of, yes. Hello.
Hello, Glenn Fleischman, editor of Shift Happens. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Also joining us from Windows Central Magazine, the editor-in-chief. Do you still call it a magazine, Daniel?
No.
Blog.
Just Windows Central.
Just a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah, tell people. I do joke around people. I'm like, yeah, I blog. That's all I do.
I'm a blogger. Are you in your mother's basement, Daniel? Where are you?
Exactly.
What are you doing there? Good to have you here. Of course, Microsoft Build was this week. Lots of AI news. We'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, let's introduce panelist number three, my good friend Owen Thomas, columnist from San Francisco Examiner. He's Alex Wilhelm's Twitter daddy. Do you still say that now? Is Twitter over? It's done. Oh, you're muted.
I think you need to say Twitter dad, not Twitter daddy. That's different.
That's a different two different things.
That's more OnlyFans.
Okay. He's Twitter furry. Is that right? No, that's wrong. That's also
wrong.
That's very wrong. This week, Twitter had a little attention on Wednesday. As Elon constantly reminded us, Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, was to announce his 2024 candidacy for presidency. Didn't go exactly as planned. Somebody noted that Twitter had fired 97 out of the 100 people who worked at Spaces, which might have had something to do with it. A lot of echoing.
They also stopped paying for the service that helped keep Spaces online. That, you know,
was it DDoS protection kind of a service, or
I think it was like more like a CDN or.
God. Right, they literally didn't have enough servers spun up. I think they're gonna, when you look up Pyrrhic victory in the dictionary, I think they're gonna put Elon's face in the next edition. It's pretty amazing, the cell phone there. Again.
His cost containment strategy at Twitter seems to be, I'm going to randomly stop paying for bills and randomly shutting servers down and see what breaks. And this is an example.
It's that story that came out, was it just last week about reporting what people inside the company responsible for real estate and other bills were talking about, like what they were asked to do, which seemed, a little wild.
And in the filings that, you know, they were saying like, look, my career is in real estate. I will not be able to work again in this industry if you have me like try to stiff our landlord.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the answer was, well, we don't care. You know, yeah, management, yeah. I.e. Elon Musk, we don't care.
Or I might be actually sentenced, you know, to jail or the
yeah, I might be personally sued. Yeah.
Persecuted or you know, prosecuted or persecuted. Yeah, it's but I mean, isn't this is what, you know, I think he maintains when he's talked about it in public. It seems like he's, you know, this is what rich people allegedly do, is that they don't pay bills strategically to see which ones they have to pay. And that just seems, you know, I don't think that's ethically the case for everybody. But, you know, certainly some other prominent people have done that. So it's amazing to see it so blatantly and on such a huge scale.
Did something happen when Trump got elected president that it just completely changed? Like it slid the ethical Overton window over about 1,000 places, because he's very famous also for not paying bills. And it feels like he made a lot of things okay.
Yeah. And there's no repercussions.
Right.
That's you get thing. Away if with I don't it. Pay bills.
Right.
If I don't pay bills, right. I'm going to get in trouble.
This is like, we
all
talk
sorts
about
of bad things will happen.
We talk about politics and stuff, but there's also a the president is also in a way a leader of what people think. And you can really establish mm-hmm. kind of a point of view that, yeah, it doesn't matter. You can now say anything you want. You can do whatever you want, and it doesn't matter. You get away with it. I think Elon must have watched this with interest and is now sort of adopting the art of the deal, as it were. On the other hand, there has been some very good news for Elon. That was the bad news. By the way, I got to point out the subtweeting that the New York Times did. This is an article by Ryan Mack and Tiffany Hsu. DeSantis' Twitter event falls short of the reach of past live streams. Within hours of the event, participants celebrated the achievement. David Sachs, who's been a big donor to the DeSantis campaign, declared it, quote, by far the biggest room ever held on social media. DeSantis himself said there were probably about 10 million people who would have watched the event. The Times says, in a very kind of crisp, single paragraph sentence, they were wrong on both counts. They were wrong on both counts. According to Twitter's metrics, high of 300,000 concurrent listeners. That is actually not, and 3.4 million afterwards, listen to the recording, not quite 10 million, nor the biggest room ever held on social media. I mean, Facebook had an 800,000 person Facebook Live event. Which, by the way, featured two BuzzFeed employees placing rubber bands around a watermelon until it exploded.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Oh, that was great. That was some entertainment. 5 million people watched the entire event at some point. The 2017, the Times is really being mean here, live stream of a pregnant giraffe on YouTube brought in 5 million viewers a day. in fact, even Twitter Spaces had done more. 3 million people last month listened to an interview of Elon by a BBC reporter in a Twitter space. This is severe degradation from what Spaces had been, and certainly nothing compared to other. AOC had to tweet, more people watched me play a game on Twitch than watched your announcement, which is true. Was she playing Among Us? I think she was, yeah. But that's pretty exciting, as is watching a watermelon about to explode. So either way, I can understand the interest. Good news.
Are you making some kind of DeSantis metaphor there?
Watermelons explosion? You think? No, I wouldn't. Never. No, I'm not. That's any resemblance to a person living or dead is accidental. I should say that at the beginning of every show. Good news for Elon, though. The FDA has approved Neuralink's study of human brain implants. Woohoo! Anybody want to get in line for this one?
It's going to be a real-life blue check for people. Because you know those are going to be the first people to sign up for this.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be Elon's stands, right?
they'll be on Twitter. They'll have their little icon. It'll be a blue check and then a little brain next to it. You know, it's going to be awesome. Let them go. It's fine.
I have Elon in my mind. I mean, to his credit, the whole idea is really to help people with brain injuries live more normal lives. So it's I'm sure that's why the FDA cleared it. They cleared Neuralink to use its brain implant and surgical robot. Just what could possibly go wrong on patients, but declined to provide more details. Should point out, Neuralink has been in trouble there, in trouble with the United States Department of Agriculture for animal welfare violations. They're in trouble with the Department of Transportation. This is a weird one. They're probing whether Neuralink illegally transported dangerous pathogens on chips removed from monkey brains without proper containment measures.
It's okay. Like a walking set of science fiction movies about to be made.
I don't know why he doesn't have a secret lair in a volcano. It doesn't.
You don't know that he doesn't.
He could.
No, if it's secret.
That's true.
You know, the exciting news, though, you know, the Neuralink thing is brain based. I realize, but I was incredibly excited about the fellow who had been paralyzed, who was able to regain the ability to use his legs, the bypass, that like a bridge technology from spine to spine, bypassing the disconnection. And I'm like, that is, you know, whenever we talk about the future, I'm always like, well, you know, we don't need flying cars necessarily. We don't need, I don't know, AI based recipe generators, but it's like people being able, with aphasia, being able to speak, people being able to walk again. This stuff is fantastic. And the question is, will anybody be able to afford it, or will it be, you know, $10 million solutions that insurance companies can't reasonably cover for, you know, the people who need it? So I'm excited. So Neuralink as a concept, I don't know what his end game is, but I'm excited if it leads to people being able to resume the lives that they had before.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that's why the FDA was a little more open to the work. It's not just so you can go in Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse. Swiss researchers implanted an electronic device in a paraplegic's skull on top of the region of the brain responsible for controlling leg movements. And then this is the AI part. Using algorithms based on adaptive AI methods, this is from the Financial Times, movement intentions are decoded in real time from the brain and then transmitted wirelessly to a neurostimulator connected to an electrode array over the part of the spinal cord that controls leg movement. That's below the injury site. And he was able to walk.
Yeah. And then also even be able to do that. Do I remember this right? It was even after a lot of training, he was able to do it without the connection in place, I think was the case.
Oh, that's interesting.
So even though the signals aren't there, he was able to produce the response required. I mean, just this is, you know, this is science fiction that we're living in, which is the good kind, the non-dystopian kind.
Yeah.
Occasionally you get it.
The Dutchman's spine was injured 11 years ago in a bike accident. They upgraded his digital bridge. He said, "This feels radically different. Before, I felt that the stimulation was controlling me. Now I am controlling the stimulation myself. I could take steps that feel natural." And there's no external computer. It's all in, you know, it's all in his head, so to speak. Thank you for bringing that up. We should talk about the positive stuff, really.
It's a feel-good story, for sure.
It is feel-good, but I'll also point out that there's down the road security risks with this as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
When you have wireless devices planted in your brain, people are going to hack those for good and for bad, you know? So that's the other side we do need to think about. Just like AI, just as we're building out AI, we need to think about both things. How do we detect the bad stuff using AI and how we use AI for good stuff? We got to do the same here with these implants and brain stuff. We got to be thinking about security and how well, because man, now you're actually really messing with people's lives potentially, right?
That's right. Well, we've seen that with the pacemakers that were hacked.
Right.
Yep.
That's something to be, obviously. The good news is I think we're much more aware of security than we used to be. And presumably medical researchers who are creating, especially wireless technologies like this, I would hope are really paying attention to that. It's not not impossible to encrypt those signals and so forth.
I wish I had Cory Doctorow to pull out from behind a bush right here and say, but wait, all the systems are proprietary and no one can investigate the code.
Oh,
and we're relying on the FDA's underfunded groups to vet that they're secure. And these companies never actually invest in security. And I'll push Cory back behind the bush.
That's exactly right.
They're good.
Yeah,
right. He's right.
Yep, he's right.
My wife has a bone anchored hearing aid, which is great. But, you know, every few years they're like, we've ended end of life to this thing that costs several thousand dollars. We're fortunate that it got covered by insurance. Other insurance payers are not, because the premiums reflect that. But there's no open source thing. It literally snaps onto an anchor on her body. And
that was surgically implanted.
The anchor is surgically implanted. Now they implant a magnet under the skin, and so it's magnetically connected, apparently. But it's a very simple device in reality. The implant is the thing that is medical, and but it's not open. Like, you know, there's a Baha bone anchored hearing aid, but there's all those other kinds of hearing aids available. What's the one that's is the one you wear an external part on? I forgot what it's called. Forgot the name of it, but it's one that goes directly and stimulates the inner ear where there's an implant.
Oh, the cochlear implant. Yeah.
Cochlear implant. Yeah. And so none of these devices have any requirement or necessity for access outside the company's proprietary interests, because they developed them and so forth. So when the company goes out of business, you saw the thing where some people had regained the limited ability to see like some shades of color, and the company had to shut down, I think, and there was no future for that implant, which is or even supporting them medically for implant side effects. So unwanted consequences from closed source development in the medical world.
This is where the communist in me comes out and just points out that for-profit medicine is destined to disappoint in the long run. This is just not, there's some things that should not be capitalistic, and medicine is one of them. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, well, sorry about that. You were talking about ChatGPT hallucinating. We all saw the story. Jeff Jarvis leaped on this. He's already he's writing a book with it. He already started the chapter. A New York lawyer is in trouble because his firm used ChatGPT for legal research. The case involved a man suing an airline over personal injury. His legal team submitted a brief that cited previous court cases, saying there's a precedent for why this should move forward. The airline's lawyers wrote to the judge, said, we can't find these cases. We can't find them. Six of the submitted cases appear to be, this is the judge speaking, bogus judicial decisions with bogus quotes and bogus internal citations.
That's amazing.
He demanded that the legal team explain itself. Over the course of several filings, it emerged, this is from the BBC, that the research had not been prepared by the lawyer, but by a colleague at his firm who used ChatGPT to find precedents. Go to the library, man. It's in the basement. We bought those books for a reason.
My favorite part is when the guy said, but I asked ChatGPT whether the citations were real, and it said they were. And then he attached screen captures of him asking ChatGPT that and assuring him they were correct.
Screenshots attached to the filing appear to show a conversation between Mr. Schwartz, the lawyer who did the research, and ChatGPT. One message says, is Varghese a real case? Referring to the quoted precedent Varghese versus China Southern Airlines. One of the cases no other lawyer could find. ChatGPT says, yeah.
Would I lie?
Yeah, it's real. So then Schwartz said, well, what's your source? After, quote, double checking, Chat says, no, it's real. You could find it on LexisNexis or Westlaw.
That's awesome.
I don't know why the guy didn't search. Yeah, there's a lot of things about that, but by that, it's like the laziest thing that a lawyer
they're in trouble.
Ever
the
done.
Judge is not happy. Yeah. There's going to be a disciplinary hearing on June 8th.
And doesn't this open him up to a malpractice suit from his client?
Probably. You got to think. And also being disbarred or sanctioned. And I love that his thing is like, I didn't realize that ChatGPT would give false results. And every time you use ChatGPT at the bottom, it says it may not offer real results. You know, be careful. And you're like, all right, I think the disclaimer is pretty good.
But I'm sorry. I think the context here, though, is interesting, because this comes as Meta and Google and Twitter have all vastly reduced their resources devoted to fact checking.
Right.
So bots like ChatGPT are training on a corpus of publicly available internet data that we know is increasingly faulty, increasingly unfact checked. Oh, yeah. And, you know, and also being fed by AI more and more. So we have chatbots creating made up internet nonsense, training on made up internet nonsense, and it risks becoming this like vortex of like verbal vomit, that, you know, that will doom our ability to trust anything we read online ever.
I blame us. It's our fault. And I mean, Twit, I mean, all of yous too. Because the tech, we have been singing its praises. The New York Times has been, Kevin Roos said, ChatGPT fell in love with me. We have been acting as if this is a thinking entity. And, you know, it makes mistakes once in a while, but you know. And so I think we oversold it to the point that this lawyer said, well, everybody says this thing's really good. And really didn't, he didn't know that it was so risky, I bet you.
Shouldn't we be, as a, you know, as a species, more sophisticated about this? I mean, I remember as a kid in like the 1980s, hand coding Eliza, you know, the computer psychotherapist. Like this was a program you could like type. It was that simple in BASIC.
Yeah.
So you know, you got a computer magazine, you typed out all the, you know,
Eliza,
all the
by the way, is still in Emacs. I can, if you want, I'll show you. It's still around, but it was dopey. You knew it was dopey because Eliza, you would say, well, how's your day been? And it would say, well, how's your day been? You know, I mean, it was just echoing kind of stuff back to you. But
and yet people were fooled by it.
Oh, yeah. You know? There was a lot of conversation. I mean, I remember back then about, well, could this replace therapists and things like that? Great piece I want to recommend in the IEEE Journal Spectrum by Rodney Brooks, who is a roboticist. He was, until 2007, director of the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab at MIT. He's taught at Stanford and Carnegie Mellon, and he's at three robotics startups. And the title, just calm down about ChatGPT-4 already. But this is really important. And stop confusing performance with competence. You read the article, Glenn?
Yeah. He's always a voice of reason. He's not a hyper, you know. I think he, even when he started getting into robotics, he was very excited about it. But I don't think he ever, I'm trying to remember, like over, I mean, almost 20 years of following his work, I don't feel he ever said, like, you know, did a Segway kind of announcement. This is going to change transportation in cities or whatever. He's like, well, it'll have applications. And then he was behind iRobot. So, you know, there are, I don't know how many millions, hundreds, tens of millions of Roombas and knockoffs out there. It did change home vacuuming. It's a narrow scope. And I think that was kind
but
of
you would never ask a Roomba for legal citations in a lawsuit, right?
Oh, just wait till they add the plugins.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, to be fair, though, paralegal jobs are one of the top on the list for AI to like take over. Like when people talk about AI replacing jobs, paralegals is going to be one of those professions because it is just essentially research and summarizing data. Well, AI is going to be good at that. It is good at that, but there will be errors for now. And right now that's where we are, right? But the thing to remember too is that even though we have these, you know, these goofs and screw-ups will make news and come out, but you know, the rate at which this stuff is improving is exponential. And it's just going to be very quickly, these stories will go away. And we won't be...
I got to disagree with you. It's not exponential, though. It's not even geometric. This is where I'll go off on you. Let's have an argument. No, just a very polite.
Okay.
I think there is a tendency. I think there's a very human thing. And also in technology where everything is exponential, you know, chip growth and speed and processors, a lot of hardware things, to assume that certain kinds of things, or not assume, but to feel that they're going to be going to continue at the rate of pace. In artificial intelligence, we've seen again and again that there have been significant, particularly in artificial intelligence, but in other software-related capacities. We've seen again and again that things have improved to a certain point and then leveled off and only eked out improvements after that. And I remember very distinctly interviewing Jan LeCun almost 10 years ago, who's one of the fathers of deep learning. Deep learning came out of the stalls they had in previous machine learning algorithms that could never get beyond, I don't know what it was, 80-something percent recognition on photo matching, on voice recognition. Deep learning was, it's the new thing. It's going to get to 100%. And he said, even in the middle of all this, it's like 2015 or something, he said, well, deep learning's kind of, we're reaching the end. It's not going to improve that much more. We're eking it out. Maybe this new kind of learning, I forget what it's called. It's not reflexive, but it's like a responsive learning thing with a cycle. I think it might be more like the generative adversarial network approach that developed. He said this has some promise, but I don't know. Like, he wasn't like throw away deep learning. Like, we got to this, we got so much better, but it's not there. I am absolutely convinced we're going to see this level off in the same way. So I don't think there is a 99.99% for large language models or any combination of things, but I think we will certainly be better than the state we are now. And ChatGPT-4 is so much better than 3.5. You can compare them side by side, but I don't think it's going to be I would strongly disagree that it's going to be an exponential improvement. I think we're getting towards the top of the significant improvements that can be made.
I think it's going to continue to improve, but I mean, I will say, in terms of the human brain and what we know, this stuff is very far from that. You know, these things still have issues with inference. They cannot do it. They can't do basic tasks that even a child can do yet. So there is, and I don't think the large language models are going to improve upon that. I'm saying, though, in terms of what we're doing right now with them, they're going to improve very, very quickly simply because of the exposure and amount of people that are using them, and the data that's being fed into them has never been done at this scale. And so I think we'll see a large improvements. I'm very skeptical of AI currently in the sense that it's going to reach, our AGI. You know, I think that's right. Extremely far off. We don't even understand how the human brain works ourselves, let alone being able to figure it out in these kind of systems. So I'm not saying we're going to reach that far, but I think within what we're doing right now with LLMs, I think we're going to see a dramatic increase over the next few months, and especially when we go to the next level of GPT. But it will be confined. You're right. I mean, we're not going to have like robots walking around in 2 years, acting like people.
This is germane.
We'll fight you over that.
The biggest story for Microsoft Build was AI. I mean, this was the AI conference, starting with Satya Nadella saying we've got 50 plus AI products to show you. I'm going to talk about 5. They're putting AI in Search. They're putting AI in Microsoft 365 in Office. They're putting it in Windows. And in all the screens Microsoft showed at the very bottom in fine print, you could barely read. It said that disclaimer, this is generated by AI and may not be accurate. Yeah. But that's a lot to put on something that may not be accurate. Rodney Brooks wrote an article to solve the problem between you two. I will throw this in. He wrote this in 2017. So he wrote this 6 years ago. The 7 deadly sins of AI predictions.
Oh, yeah.
And one of them really is, and I think this is what's going on right now. We're seeing how fast we are going from DALL-E to DALL-E 2 to Stable Diffusion, from ChatGPT 3 to ChatGPT 4. It looks like, and it might even be, Glenn, exponential at this point, but I think you're not saying it's not exponential or it's not geometric. What we don't know is it continuous?
And it's the improvement factor, right? It's like, what's perfection? And perfection would be 100%.
I mean, it's Zeno's paradox. You're not going to get there.
Right. But 100, let's say it's 99.9% voice recognition, right? I just did a big roundup for Charter on AI transcription tools. And I did it earlier this year, did a lot of, checking major services that are available to individuals. And some of them also included ChatGPT summaries or similar ones. And, a few months went by, the review just went up, and I was doing a bunch of interviews. I'm doing a history of Yahoo Pipes, by the way, for those who remember Yahoo Pipes.
Oh, my God, I miss Yahoo Pipes.
Yeah.
That was
followed you, right?
Excuse me. That was great. Really great.
I'll
it was so great.
I'll let you know.
I inadvertently dropped an F-bomb. That's how awesome. Great it was.
But so I interviewed, 10 people, all the original folks, and had these 40-minute to hour-and-a-half conversations, recorded all as I can do now. And I take detailed notes. I try to keep verbatim quotations. I've got a recording, but I feed it into one of the best of these AI recognition things. And I hadn't seen the ChatGPT-4 version. The summary, because I'm giving it, large language models are really good at taking a corpus of text and comparing it to a corpus of text. It does so well with that as opposed to extrapolate. So I'll give it the interview and it says, here's a summary of what you talked about. And I thought, if I did this myself, it would take me 30 to 60 minutes to come up with a list that was that good. And it was very good. And it was also 100% accurate. There was nothing introduced. And I was like, well, here is a use case. Here's something that works for me today. It helps me inform my reporting because it allows me to review that and find the spots in the text, in addition to the fact that I'm getting extremely reliable, like 97, 98% AI transcription. So that to me is kind of like, oh, well, we're a new golden age for reporters who need transcriptions and more efficient ways of producing their work, right, without giving up the actual writing part.
So there's some useful things. I note that the big one where you get in trouble is anytime you use the word think. Because these are not thinking. They can't. Extrapolation is a good word. They cannot take existing facts and extrapolate from it. Brooks uses the example of, you can have a picture recognize that that's two guys in the park throwing a frisbee. And you might say, wow, that's really impressive. But you can't say, well, can you eat a frisbee? How far can you throw a frisbee? It doesn't know frisbee. It doesn't understand the concept of frisbee. It's not thinking. And I think we owe it to the unwashed masses, normal people, to kind of really belabor that point. The problem is we're also excited about this, and it fits our science fiction, fantasies, that I think we've oversold it to people. And I think it would really...
It's what humans do, right?
Yeah,
we have
it's normal.
That we anthropomorphize, or like they're thinking, and we do it. We see faces everywhere, and we see
That's
something
right.
with the face. We treat it differently, So humans are just wired to sort of see this behavior and then extrapolate from it and believe that. So we're just naturally flawed. You're right, though. I mean, we do need to get it out there. That this definitely has limits. But like I said, it's being rolled out in so many different ways that it's really starting to make an impact. It's just gone from a buzzword and there's research and here's a new paper to like, oh, here's this product. Oh, here's another product. And I think that's why it's just getting so much attention, right? I mean, if you look at Stable Diffusion, looking at video, there was just that, I don't know if you guys saw the video going around with DeSantis in the playing in the office on the show. They replaced Michael's face with DeSantis's face. And it's not 100%, but it looks really pretty good. And so, how these kind of things affect, elections coming up and everything, it's going to be real, So I think that's the threat. The idea, though, that these things are thinking and all this, it's, we still got a long way before that happens.
So this is, by the way, it was tweeted by Donald Trump Jr. So I don't know. Furthermore, I don't know.
Oh, that looks,
it's pretty uncanny. I mean, it is Ron DeSantis's. Wow. That's a deep fake. That's really really good. Does it have his voice? I don't want to turn on the sound because I know I'll get taken down.
Yeah, it's his voice that's puts through Michael's lines.
Okay, let me.
Look, ma'am, would you please tell Daryl that this is not a woman's suit?
Oh my God, that's a woman's suit.
You're wearing a woman's suit?
No, I do. I wear men's suits.
Well, it is Ron's voice.
Yeah.
Oh, we're in a deep whirl of deep fake heart here. This is the beginning. Wow. Yeah,
This
imagine
is
it's the 2 years.
It's the fun part, though. That's, I think, why it got so much attention is it is a great demo, right? And things that have a great demo you want to show off, and then people get bored of them. What was the thing, Jib Jab?
Jib Jab.
Yeah. And they created some tools where you can make your own Jib Jabs. Yeah. It was like fun for 12 seconds.
Right.
Because a very specific style or everyone making
I
Simpsons faces of themselves.
I subscribed to Jib Jab for a year and used it for a week.
I think we're seeing the hype curve, starting to to fade on it. But it's, there are things like, I'm working on a website right now and I have not found a graphical tool I like. I'm so old. I remember good graphical tools. They don't exist anymore. And I've kind of forgotten a lot of my HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So I'm using ChatGPT-4. I'm like, hey, I for, you know, don't say I've forgotten. Hey, dear Mr. Ms. Java, ChatGPT, I say, you know, how do I make a box that is centered? How do I do this? Whatever. And it spits out, I mean, this is like Copilot, right? But I'm asking kind of very specific questions. I had a problem on a page. I described it in natural language. And I said, why does the page move back and forth when I've got this with this CSS property? He said, oh, you need to do set overflow property to whatever. And I was like, oh my God, that's it. But I gave it this like paragraph long description of a problem. And again, it's a verifiable solution. It said, this is the thing I tested and it worked. I didn't say like, I've, you know, I'm a hemophiliac and I'm bleeding. What do I do? That's probably not a good some people's use of it. That's an example.
You know, I look at this video. Don't worry about me, I'm okay. We are heading into an election. This originally was created by C3P Meme and posts on Twitter. We're heading into an election where
somebody was rifling through them, but crazy, and I grabbed one.
This is going to be...
And it fit.
A problem. So I think this is really going to be a problem.
This is funny, but this is funny. It's going to be difficult for people to tell the difference. I mean, think of someone in their 70s on Facebook.
Watch
it. These videos.
Watch it, buddy.
I'm just saying.
Careful.
They're not going to see the difference. For them, the uncanny valley doesn't exist. They're going to believe
it. No, you're right.
And then they're going to, you know, and if it's a serious thing, you know, an event that's happened, you know, there was a, right, we'll get to that story, right, about the, was it the image that went around, the AI-generated image of the Pentagon?
Yeah, and, let's take a break. Like I want to come back. And I still want to really talk about what Microsoft announced, because I think these are all really important things. But I need to take a little break. We've got a great panel. It's so nice to have you, Daniel, covering the build, but everything else. Glenn Fleischman. Owen, I see you. I see you, man, and your beautiful painting, which was smuggled into the United States illegally, but we won't mention that. There is a story there, though, right? He got it through customs.
Oh yeah. it was work documents.
Why do you have to smuggle a painting in, though? I don't understand.
Oh, I forgot.
Could you
why.
Just say maybe you didn't want to declare its value, but I don't.
Yeah,
know.
I think it was just.
It's just a painting, man.
Basically, that was the advice given at the time.
Yeah.
When the painting was acquired.
I know. Yeah. I know. I almost brought a Spanish ham in after a visit to Barcelona, but I was talked out of that. That's the good thing. Our show today brought to you by ACI Learning. They sponsor our studio. We're big fans. You may say, well, who's ACI Learning? I know you know the name IT Pro. They've been with us since they started in 2013. IT Pro is now part of ACI Learning's family. IT Pro's capabilities continue to grow. They have those great, there's their studio. I've been there in Gainesville. Highly entertaining, literally bingeable, short format content that teaches you IT skills so you can get the certifications so that you can get the job. There's over 7,000 hours now in their library, and they're creating new content every day, Monday through Friday. And by the way, great content for enhancing your existing skills. If you've got an IT team, for building their skills. If you're an MSP, you must love IT Pro. We know it. And ACI Learning, 30% of ACI learners are managed service providers. ACI Learning is dedicated to supporting your MSP team through any challenges. An MSP, you're selling the expertise of your team, their ability to solve problems for your clients. They will love ACI Learning. For instance, the ACI Learning Practice Labs, a place you can test and experiment before deploying new apps or updates without compromising your live system. That's pretty cool. Try out your skills on virtual machine labs. You could just do it with a browser and be running Windows Server, desktop clients. You can run it anywhere, Mac OS, Linux, iOS, Windows. You can prepare for challenging certification examinations with practice exams. It's always best to take the test before you take it for real. You could take and retake tests to make sure you're ready to sit for the certification exam. One happy MSP team leader told us, quote, I had 110 engineers in the field. Wow. We had dozens of IT Pro accounts. Last year alone, they passed over 40 certs. That's real success. If your IT training isn't raising your team to the level you need ACI Learning. And by the way, ACI Learning's content is so bingeable, is so high quality. The industry average completion rate on these on videos from other companies is around 30%. 70% of people bail out. With IT Pro, it's an over 80% completion rate. Why? Because these are great. They're entertaining. They're fun. And you're really learning. Don't settle for subpar training. This is the format IT pros want. And with their Pro Portal, you can assign courses, you can manage seats, you can unassign and assign team members. You can even create custom programs for your team. It's a great way to, in fact, a much needed way to stay compliant with regulations, to identify potential risks and weaknesses before they're a problem, to future-proof your business, to retain top talent. It's a great benefit for your IT team. Upskill that team, gain essential insights into training for individuals, teams, and leaders. While other team training companies may not comply with regulatory requirements, you'll be glad to know ACI Learning is ISO certified. So you are getting the world-class training your team deserves. Try it for yourself, then bring the whole team along. For individuals, use the code TWIT30 for 30% off on a standard or premium individual IT Pro membership. You can even get volume discounts for teams from 2 to 1,000. The volume discounts start at 5 seats. Look, the best thing to do is learn more about ACI Learning's premium training options across audit, across IT, across cybersecurity readiness at go.acilearning.com/twit. go.acilearning.com/twit. Fill out the form there. You can learn about a free 2-week trial for training your entire team. go.acilearning.com/twit. Somebody asked, I should mention, unfortunately, we are not sponsored by Cognizant, by Aramco, by any of the companies on my shirt or my hat. The boss does not sponsor this show. I'm just celebrating a very nice race from my man, Fernando Alonso, in the Formula One. You wear a team jersey during football games. It's okay, right? I can wear a fire suit. If it gets spicy in here, I'm ready. All right, let's get back to AI. You were mentioning the picture. It was, it's funny because this picture of the Pentagon on fire, which was, obviously a fake. Pentagon was not on fire. The New York Times blamed AI for it. And I really think that was kind of a mistake. It really was Twitter that spread it.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
You could have done that in Photoshop. Was that an AI thing or a Twitter thing or social media thing?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they probably did latch onto the AI for the buzz, but yeah, you're right. I mean, this is the danger of social networks, right? I mean, we saw that when they had the verified accounts and, what was it? Oh, that one was trying to be a pharmaceutical company, so they're going to give away insulin for free.
Well, that's exactly what happened here. This was a fake Bloomberg account, right, that had the blue check, tweeted this picture of the Pentagon burning, and the stock market plummeted as a result. I think CNN got it right. Verified Twitter accounts share fake image of explosion causing confusion. Donnie O'Sullivan knows what he's talking about. He's
great.
He's a smart guy who was banned from Twitter for a while. AI generated, but you know what? If you look at it, it's not we 70-year-olds might not know that fence is all munged up, but it's pretty obviously fake. Whether it was Photoshopped or AI is kind of irrelevant. The real issue was it was tweeted out by an account that looked like it was Bloomberg with a blue check.
I mean, the issue, right, with AI is that you could imagine AI being used to generate like 10 different angles of the same scene. Like, there's an efficiency gained over human Photoshop. But yeah, I think I think the information environment is more the issue here. Like RT Russia Today was one of the accounts that shared it.
A legitimate RT account, because they loved it, right?
Yeah. The legitimate sharer of legitimate misinformation,
right.
Shared actual made up, made up misinformation.
Right. Stock market Dow fell 80 points in 4 minutes, but it fully recovered because it became pretty obvious it was a fake, right? It took the fire department from Arlington, Virginia, to tweet that it and the Pentagon Force Protection Agency said there is no explosion or incident taking place anywhere near the Pentagon. No hazards to the public. And then the stock market recovered. Yeah, to me, that's really more about blue checks. And, that's something people have to learn, too. The blue check on Twitter doesn't mean the same thing as it used to.
Yeah, no, that's a whole other thing. But like I would say with AI, too, what's interesting about AI is, of course, you could generate these images, but you can also use AI to detect these images, right?
Right.
Like there are ways to do that, to analyze the photos and videos. And what should happen is all of these companies, Microsoft included, should be investing in technologies that do that as part and parcel of making these other technologies. And what social networks need to do and maybe be legislated into doing is implementing these safeguards into the system so that they're automatically detected and flagged as AI generated. Like, this is going to be possible. This is not out of the realm of, science fiction. But right now, I mean, Elon Musk doesn't care about any of that. He has a meme on his Twitter account right now attributed to Voltaire.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't Voltaire. It was a white supremacist.
And all his followers are like, yeah, but the quote's good.
It's like, yeah, no, the quote's not good. The quote is also wrong. Yes. In fact, when I read it and I didn't know it wasn't Voltaire, I thought, boy, Voltaire really got that wrong. I have to rethink my whole idea of the father of enlightenment. I mean, the age of reason.
Didn't Elon Musk buy Twitter to conquer the bots? And it feels like the bots are conquering him.
No, he bought Twitter to do exactly what he's doing, which is to share fake Voltaire quotes from neo-Nazis. The quote, by the way, is to learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. And, if you're not
hilarious on Twitter.
Yeah, right.
Free speech.
Free speech,
who you're
man.
Not allowed to criticize.
Then, of course, it turns out that it wasn't Voltaire, but it was a neo-Nazi that tweeted it. And actually, the first reply was, I guess we can't criticize children with leukemia then. So, that's obviously a specious quote. It doesn't make it's, I think Voltaire would not have said that, to be honest with you.
I think what was his was, I disagree with what you say, but I will fight to the death your right to say it. Something
there you go.
Along those lines.
That's free speech, right?
That's a little bit Voltaire-ier.
By the way, this comes on the heels of Twitter pulling out of the EU disinformation code. Elon has essentially said, no, we loved it. What? No, what's wrong? Nothing wrong with that.
It was voluntarily, too. It wasn't even like a commitment,
right?
That kind of agreement. Like, they weren't forced to do anything. It was just saying, we'll try to do stuff. That was too much.
It doesn't matter because after August 25th, EU's internal market commissioner said, doesn't matter. We're going to enforce this law. So you're going to have to do something about disinformation anyway. We'll see.
And that's the right approach. I don't know if you guys see, I put in the show notes, there was another funny AI thing that went around. I think it was last night with politicians cheating. Someone generated a bunch of images of famous politicians.
Oh God.
Cheating on their spouses.
Okay. I just want to tell you, this is fake.
This thread is something
this
else.
This is not real. Okay. I'm just saying, oh my God, this is not. And you know what? You can kind of tell these are not real. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But, give it a couple more years.
Well, you and I can tell. But they're pretty good.
They're impressively awkward. There's something really awkward and awful
Bernie doesn't
them.
Look like he's having fun, does he? No.
No, it makes it seem... Is Joe Biden cheating with his own wife? That's what it looks like.
Really?
On his wife.
He doesn't remember.
Okay. It's just they didn't make it prettier. If it was prettier, you wouldn't believe it. It's so bizarre.
Skeezy. Yeah.
skeezy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what is actually very, very well executed? And I believe it, I believe they used AI for this. There's an account called Republicans, and it's Republicans,
in drag,
as drag queen.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Just Google Ru, like RuPaul Publicans. And it should pop right up. It's really excellently done.
I will leave that as an exercise for the listener. How about?
Yeah.
It's on Insta. Yeah. Actually, I might follow it. Just it's a good thing to have around. Okay, it is pretty funny. Okay, I'm sorry. No. The top five announcements from Microsoft Build that you need to know.
All right.
It was really an AI show, right? ChatGPT gets Bing integration. That's not new, is it?
Well, so yeah, actually kind of is. So the problem with ChatGPT was it was, you know, locked off basically to the end of 2021 for information. And so if you asked about like the basketball game last night with the Celtics, it would have no idea what you're talking about. Where Bing does, Bing has access to the search engine. And so that's the difference between the two. Otherwise, they're effectively the same. So what happens now is there's the plugin, and they're going to allow basically ChatGPT to have access to Bing. So now it becomes more effective. So the differences between ChatGPT and Bing are really blurring now, which is good for Microsoft because users don't need to choose between them. And same with the plugins.
Oh, see. Okay. So I read the headline backwards because Bing had already had ChatGPT integrated.
Right.
This is now ChatGPT getting Bing integrated, so it has more up-to-date search results. Not just Bing either. Quite a few extensions. They talked about OpenTable, which has been around for a while, and Zapier, but they're adding quite a few extensions. And this kind of makes sense because now, like Wolfram Alpha, that's not new, but that's in there.
Instacart. I thought the Instacart was out before. I thought you could use Instacart.
They announced it. You know, I pay for ChatGPT, but not everybody's getting all the plugins. I don't have access to any of them.
Yeah. So what happened was ChatGPT announced the plugin support week ago. It's like 6 weeks ago. And then Microsoft announced plugin support a couple of weeks ago. And then at Build, what they basically announced was, hey, our plugins, they're interoperable.
Build them
for Bing, they work on ChatGPT. You build them for ChatGPT, they're going to work on Bing, which is great because as a developer, you don't want to have to choose between these two systems if you have limited resources, and you're not going to have to do that anymore. There, it's going to be the same system, which is going to be really beneficial for Microsoft here because they're going to, you know, reap the benefits.
Yeah, that was
you know what this makes me.
Go ahead, Owen.
This makes me think of Facebook platform. Like, yeah,
yes.
There's going to be a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz. Probably, you know, some startups are going to get $100 million plus Series A valuations because they build ChatGPT plugins. And then we're going to have the privacy violations. Then we're going to have the, you know, runaway spam. Then we're going to have the, you know, the ethical problems. And OpenAI is going to say, oops, we really should have thought about all of that.
I'm just picturing TaskRabbit, Instagram, or Instacart. Like, I want to see the mashup of this where you tell it something and your whole life is ruined because it just goes out and it reaches into the real world. It books you tickets to Mexico. It hires a disposal company.
You get 800 pizzas delivered. Yeah.
Orders of sulfuric acid. You know.
Remember when Facebook started spamming your friends with all of your e-commerce purchases?
Oh, my God.
Like it ruined someone's proposal because, you know, it posted like so-and-so just bought an engagement ring.
Wow. So, yeah, I saw that. In fact, platform, you said that that it's like the AI Facebook platform. That's, in fact, Satya even explicitly addressed this.
It is a platform.
He brought up Bill Gates' definition of a platform, which is a platform is something that the people who use it make more money than the platform makers make, in effect, right? Microsoft knows better than anybody the power of a platform. It created Windows, and the people who developed on top of Windows did very well and I guess made more money in aggregate than Microsoft did. But everybody benefited from that. So Microsoft says this is a new platform, essentially, yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, they were able to get this plugin format compatible with ChatGPT because they own 47% of ChatGPT, right?
Yeah. I mean, who knows what's exactly in those agreements, but yeah, obviously the relationship. And I know this bothers Elon Musk, but I think it's just more sour, you know, grapes because he pulled out.
Founded it and pulled out because they were going to commercialize it and he didn't want him to commercialize it.
Well, if you go by Semaphore, they said he pulled out because he wanted to take over the company. Yeah. He wanted to be put in charge.
That makes
and
a
they
lot
said
more
no.
sense. Yeah, that makes a lot more
sense. And so he
sense.
Was like, all right, well, I'm going to go. But then he said, I'll still give you some money. And they're like, all right, cool. And then he didn't give the money. And then all of a sudden they want to scale up because Google was doing these large LLMs. And then that's where Microsoft came in. So Microsoft's like, here's a couple billion dollars. That's how it all happened. So technically this is, yeah, it's all Musk's creation. It's its creation from the beginning of OpenAI and its creation where it is now because of his actions.
Yeah.
So
Microsoft, they said put in $10 billion, but I think we learned this week that the $10 billion was really in kind. It was Azure time. But that's one thing that OpenAI really needs. It's very expensive to generate these large language models, and they're doing it all on
Azure.
And
they have a supercomputer.
Yeah.
Yeah, the supercomputer was that was 2020, I believe, that Microsoft and OpenAI announced that they're going to use the that to train their LLMs.
Right,
so
right.
that's a big difference here with Microsoft versus some of the other, you know, this is why I worry about Apple. I'm curious what Apple's doing because they don't quite have this infrastructure.
Oh, we'll get to Apple because Apple's coming up with a big announcement and I'll be very curious how they respond. You know, we've been really watching Google and Microsoft go back and forth over AI, right? There was Google I.O., where it was AI every 3 seconds. I have to say Bard, Google's chat engine, search engine, seems a little bit laggard compared to ChatGPT, but Google's now integrating it into their own search with SGE. It's a Google Labs thing. So and then Microsoft comes back with their own volley of AI applications. So that was the first one, Bing integration. Bing Chat is boosted with plugins. Oh, here's the plugin slide. This is the one with all of the plugins, from Adobe to Zillow and everything in between.
Spotify.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they did the Spotify. They said the Spotify thing like 4 times. It was really we covered both keynotes with Rich Campbell on day one and Rich and Paul Theriault on day two. And both times they announced that you could generate a Spotify playlist. Like, this is the number one thing people want to do. Developers. Right.
You want to buy a personal computer so you can do recipes. You know, that's the primary use case.
I remember that. Everything. And balance your checkbook, right?
Balance your checkbook. I'm still using Quicken, but you know, I'm sure this has been talked about before, but this continues the culmination of like Google search results are terrible. And I wonder if one of the reasons that Microsoft's been able to have so much room to run on this is that, I mean, I am sick of Google results. Like, I even if ChatGPT is making stuff up, it's better than when I got it at Google. So I think Bing has an incredible opportunity if Microsoft doesn't mess it up with all the extensions, with the whole approach, that it could dramatically leapfrog. I mean, again, I am completely concerned about the shape of inaccurate results, but at the same time, I get inaccurate results on Google. You search in almost anything on Google now, and often if the first or second result isn't good for me, I have to go down pages or do a ton of refinement. It can take me 5 or 10 minutes to shape a Google search that actually gets me past the spam, and that is unacceptable. And I also don't blame them, because I'm sure there's a war in heaven that's always going on between the spamming search results and not. But it would be great if this is one way to cut through it, is that you can't spam the LLMs the way you can a Google search index.
It's interesting. I've been hearing that a lot too, you know, and obviously I don't use Google much anymore myself. I haven't
used
Bing.
Do you use Bing now, Daniel? Is that your preference?
Oh, yeah, I've always been
an Alta Vista person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've been using Bing for many, many years, but
occupationally, but no, you prefer it.
I actually prefer, and plus I get, you know, there's the credits you get on Bing. So I have like 230,000 credits.
Oh my
and
God.
I can go and redeem those for like,
hours,
I can redeem them for Amazon cards and Spotify cards. And
those Bing rewards are better than I thought.
They're really good. I mean, it literally does pay you to, and same thing with shopping. You get money back on shopping too. So It's really good in the U.S. I think Microsoft's problem is outside the U.S. It starts to not be as good, where Google tends to have a little bit better global presence. Mm-hmm. I've been hearing this from a lot of people that Google's search results have just been not as good. That said, there's not a ton of evidence currently that Microsoft is gaining any significant traction with Bing, even with all this hype. They were around 2-4% before. They're maybe slightly higher now.
Launching pad. This is where it's exciting to think we could have another search engine war. It was actually valid. It's like
we need one.
Google's let itself degrade. To what extent it's direct responsibility or not? And it'd be great to have a real matchup again.
I'm very sad because I was using Neva and they just sold and they're shutting down. I was paying for search. So let's put a pin in the announcements at Build, because I kind of want to. You said something. I think that some listeners are going to say, what? Google search has gone downhill.
Don't you think?
Do we all agree to that?
I've seen it dramatically. I don't know how other people feel. Well, you're not using it, Daniel. So you're.
I use it on occasion, but what I've seen people complain about too is all the ads and you type in something.
What do you think? Is that premise acceptable to you? Google's search results aren't good anymore?
I mean, for commercial results, like I remember looking for, looking for a hotel room last fall, and I finally found a site that had a good discount on a hotel I wanted to stay at, and I ended up picking up the phone because I just did not trust that the website Google was serving me was reputable. It wasn't Expedia or Priceline or one that I'd heard of. And I think that a lot of searches are kind of degraded at this point.
Let's do an experiment. So I'm going to search for Tina Turner. The late Tina Turner passed away this week. This is the Google search for Tina Turner. It says 394 million results, 0.61 seconds. Only one of the results is on this page. They're all below the fold. In fact, way below the fold.
And it's this is a way to get away from non-authoritativeness is you put the stuff that's very authoritative that you've curated. It's Yahoo. It's a Yahoo portal above the
fold. Yeah, there's pictures of Tina Turner. There's one article to the USA Today. There's when she was born, when she died. Here's a video from YouTube, a Google property. And then the Wikipedia result. Plus a panel that shows where you can listen to her music on YouTube, Spotify, Pandora, or YouTube Music. A knowledge graph about Box, which is cribbed directly from Wikipedia, I might add. So it's really the same as that Wikipedia result. People also ask, and now I'm below the fold, there's songs people also search for. There's more YouTube videos. Finally, I get top stories. Now, Bing, let's look at Bing. It's links right away. There is a knowledge graph. There is a top searched artists.
It's not much different.
I feel like there are more links here. I mean, at least above the fold, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pages that are linked. You know, they're all obituaries, but they're not all obituaries. So that's kind of a good. I think that's a better result. I would show you Neva, but I don't think they exist anymore.
Now the worst one is you search for a how-to thing. You're like, why is my iCloud drive so slow? A question I've asked a lot lately.
Yeah.
And my sync's slow. And you get maybe one or two good results, and you get hundreds of pages that are optimized, and they're often they're clearly maybe pre-AI generated text that was copied and pasted.
I'm going to ask a question that I will then answer, which is, why is every how-to question that you search for a YouTube video? And I'm pretty sure the answer is money, because YouTube monetizes better than like creating a how-to website.
I don't want to watch a video. I really don't.
Exactly.
It's inefficient.
It's more profitable.
Oh yeah, apparently. It's good for YouTube.
Ever tell you how I made $1,200 off YouTube by accident? I made a airport utility run a walkthrough once years ago, posted it on YouTube, and I made $1,200 off it without even knowing I was getting the money because it was coming in tiny amounts. They're like, you've got a lot of views. You can monetize this before they impose the things. I said yes, and I already had a Google AdSense account. So it was just depositing small amounts over years. And one day I looked at where it was like, oh, here's how much money you made. I'm like, how did I make $1,200 off that? So that's
pretty hysterical.
That's why.
Yeah, for years, John C. Dvorak said his number one YouTube video was one he made of a Barney doll singing in his bathroom floor. I'm looking for his, I don't think he has a channel anymore, so I can't find out. I bet you it's still number one, though, I have to say. So what do we do? That's not acceptable. Is there a replacement coming? Is Bing the right way to go? Using Bing.
I think Bing still has its, hang-ups with people. They think it's kind of a joke. But it is, I think Glenn's right, right? If there's going to be one opportunity for Bing, this is it. There was also the talk that Samsung may adopt Bing as its default browser, but it looks like
they changed their mind.
But stuff like that would be needed, because even though most people would still switch away. The problem is people are like, once you're hooked into Google, it's just like browsers. You know the thing. But Microsoft's making a good effort here. I mean, they're doing all they can. It's just changing sentiment. There's two things that I think are always required in these situations, right? One, and we almost have them. Google is going to be required to basically really trip up on itself and fail and annoy people enough that they want to move away. And then there needs to be a really good alternative for people to go to. And we're kind of almost there, but we haven't seen the actual push yet. So
Marissa Meyer has answered the question, by the way, of why a former Yahoo CEO, but also at Google for many years before that. And she just says that Google results are bad because everything is bad on the web. And I'm like, all right, she has a point. It's like,
that's,
there's a lot more
grim
fraud today than 20 years ago. There's just a lot more. She says, I think because there's a lot of economic incentive for misinformation, for clicks, for purchases. And this all makes sense. And this is on an interview with Freakonomics podcast, where they asked, is Google getting worse? The answer was, yeah. And they talked to her because they figured, she's actually a slightly disinterested third party now, not being at the company and having led it to where it was. So
what do you use, Glenn, as your phrase to test search engines? You said, how do I back up my.
Oh yeah. Or, hotel, what's the best hotel and whatever, what's the best, gas grill. I look at for things like that, like they're generic enough and you should get authoritative results, because think how many, there's 20 publications that have really good Roundup guides on gas grills. And often, not always, but often the top results for things like that are polluted by, maybe I have terrible results, but my results are polluted by, this is the best blah, 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 these, nonsense things from sites that don't have any credibility, but they show up in Google results.
Right.
So at least Wirecutter showed up there. I always see you.
No, this is not Google. So I want to say this is not Google. This is
what's this?
After Neva went down, I've been looking for replacements, and I'm trying one called Kagi, K-A-G-I. I think Jason Snell recommended it. It's not free. Neither was Neva. It's $5 a month, but therefore no ads. And in theory, I guess, no need to monetize. And these are good results, right? This, you would agree, these are the results you'd want.
Yeah, I'm doing a Google search right now, and I'm getting actually very good gut results for gas grills.
Oh,
I feel way down before I start getting. Maybe that's the bad one. It's, I do a lot of how-to writing, and so when I'm trying to get an answer, I will search forums and things like that. So I start on Google, to see if anyone's posted anywhere a similar problem, because sometimes you'll find somebody writes in with a question and you'll find one other person in, 2008 had this situation. They described it, maybe even how to fix it.
Well, that's why people do site:reddit.com.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's the best search engine for that
stack
kind of
exchange
thing. Yeah. In fact, there's great. If I were looking for the best gas grill, I would search Reddit, not anything, not the wide internet.
You know, it's interesting. Everyone from Wikipedia to Reddit to Twitter has been looking to extract more money from the use of their, you know, kind of data corpus, much of which is contributed by, you know, ordinary users. But we'll leave that aside. From, among other things, AI companies looking to train their language models, which I think is smart.
Oh, yeah. They're totally scraping Reddit, right? Of course. Yeah. And Stack Exchange.
Yeah. And that should not be free.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although, as you also point out, we made it. Damn it. The thing about Reddit is there's 20 people who care more about gas grills than life itself. And those are the people you want to ask, what's the best gas grill, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty gutsy for Elon Musk to, you know, look to charge everyone for...
Yeah. Oh, he is
the use of our data.
He has really pissed off academics because he not only is charging now, he's saying if you had Twitter data on your servers that you were using for academic research, you must delete it now if you're not going to pay us for it. And again, that's not, you weren't even there, Elon, when most of that data was generated.
Yeah.
You weren't even there. I guess he wants $44 billion back.
What was it? Yahoo Guides. I feel like Yahoo had every product. They had so many products that you could find a Yahoo product that did everything. And I think there was a Yahoo Guides or something like that that had a product experts in different categories who specialized and got paid in some basis before affiliate programs and all that kind of referral revenue. That's
Yahoo
the other thing, by
answers.
The way.
Because how is Babby formed?
Oh, right? I love that. this is the other part is... The reason Google results have become poor is because advertising rates went way down. I mean, particularly it was accelerated early in the pandemic, but a lot of publications have found it. I think all of us understand this very well on this episode. I found it difficult for advertising dollars to support most publications. And so some went to subscribers, but a lot followed the Wirecutter was a little cutting edge in looking at the how far you could push the we are totally editorially independent, which they were and are, and the we're taking money for referring you to a place in this slightly hands-off transaction. And, you know, in I remember long ago back in 2000 or something, the Seattle Times said, we're never going to put advertisements on our cover. And, you know, fast forward 15 years, the Seattle Times, of course, they have ads on their cover. It's the same thing. Every site now has affiliate relationships because it's a much more reliable form of income than anything else. So you go on, you're optimizing for Google because you want the affiliate revenue from Google so that you can make the money to run your whatever you're doing.
You can't 100%. Anymore go to, unfortunately, Yahoo Answers. But back in back in 2000,
R.I.P.
Back in 2006, a user named Kavya asked the very famous query, "How is Babby formed? How girl get pregnant?"
Someone made a YouTube video like they animated.
Oh
that,
yeah, I totally. I mean, this is from Know Your Meme, and you can find all of the meme-y responses to this. This is the famous
how
YouTube.
Is Babby formed? How girl get pregnant? They need to do way in stain mother. Kill your babby because the babby cat freaks back. It was on the news.
All right, enough. Display. Let's move on to the top five announcements. Number three, Windows 11 gets its own AI assistant. Yeah. Microsoft has been using the phrase Copilot or the brand Copilot, starting, I think, with GitHub Copilot, right? That's now 2 years old. And it's now spreading. The latest Copilot is Windows Copilot. What does it do, Daniel?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just kind of funny. I mean, we jokingly call it Cortana 2.0 by Microsoft.
Yeah, didn't they have that in there? Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. So it's not that radically different. Obviously, it doesn't look like Cortana. It's not called that. It does pop out from the side, though, and it's going to be access to the chat, Bing chat as well. So that's not a huge thing. But the bigger deal is it can act upon Windows. You can ask it to do things, you know, put my computer into dark mode and, you know, go to do my Windows update. And you can actually do more voice commands that are more advanced to get the operating system to do stuff that you may not have known where it is or whether it could do it or not. And so this is, I think, where the first step of where these digital assistants may actually become useful. I mean, you think about, like, Siri's been around for so long now, and that really has not improved, right? And so
none of them have. In fact, we were talking earlier, Micah and I, on Ask the Tech Guys. Somebody said, "I'm in my nursing home. I used to set an alarm with the Google Assistant. You know, set alarm for 4:50, and then for a long time, I could say how much time is left in the alarm. Now it just says you have an alarm set for 4:50. It's gotten dumber." And he said, "Why is it getting dumber?" But this seems like all three assistants have been very disappointing.
Serious, terrible.
But
embarrassing.
None of them are very good.
Multi-trillion-dollar company. What are you doing?
But I'm not sure I want ChatGPT in there, because it's going to go on and on and on. Well, let me tell you, you had an alarm. But, you know, I mean,
I just like to be able to say, like, I can't. Siri currently, if I say, you know, send a text message to my child's name, it'll say mobile or email. And I'm like, well, I don't know. What's the thing I've used for the last, you know, 7 years to use them? Maybe that would be the method. And then if you say mobile or email, it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, like, you just asked me.
Let me see what I found on the web about that. Yeah,
that's right. Email is a
This is where I do really look forward to this stuff with machine learning and what we're calling AI, is the ability to learn a user's behavior so that it can act upon stuff usually proactively, right? It's like, well, you usually do this around this time, you know, or like, say right now you can get a notification, you have a meeting coming up. Cool. Why not, you know, it alerts you, launches you into the meeting or gets you set up for it, right? It actually acts upon the thing before you need to do it yourself. I think that's sort of the next level of this stuff that I'm really kind of looking forward to. And you can ask it things probably to, you know, look at your documents. That's going to be because they have Copilot now coming out for Office.
Yeah, that's that document summary thing Glenn was talking about. I think it'll be good at that, right?
Gosh.
Showed us an example, a writer who has a bunch of notes. And you said, can you summarize my notes on this topic so that I can start my novel or whatever? And
I took 4,000 words of an interview just to see how replaceable I am. I only take 4,000 words. So to ChatGPT-4, write a 500-word article from this using direct quotes and don't use anything that's not
was
in
it. Good?
It wrote, it was not bad.
It was not bad. That's not bad. It's not good.
If someone had published it, it wouldn't have been entirely inaccurate, because it did actually accurately only use quotes from the article, and it used them essentially correctly. It was boring, and it didn't have any, there was no reason for the article to exist. It didn't have a conclusive tone to it,
right?
And it wasn't analytical.
But you could add all that.
I was like,
after the fact.
I mean, yeah, I'd look forward to that, to that not being my job. That's why, you know, moving to the,
but you
the
don't want
lucrative field of 19th century print history instead of journalism. It's a much,
but much you slower. Don't want it to do all the things that you would do
for you. I want it to be an enhancement, and I hope it will be.
Yeah.
And I think, again, as a writer, I have particular, you know, we all have particular needs that there are things, and you know, like transcription is an incredible leg up. Like having a transcript of everything that's, if it's not perfect, I can go listen to the audio and fix it up so it's verbatim in a few seconds. That is an incredible enhancement over... Yeah. You know, I mean, that alone, like, that could save hours on a long article very easily.
Even with Microsoft Teams, they've been advertising the feature where it will not only do a transcription of their meeting, which you expect at this point in technology, but it will also summarize that meeting and provide action points to be taken.
Action items would be great, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if you miss this meeting, not only do you get a summary, but you get a quick list of the things that needs to be done. That's like the next level of, like, really now it's useful.
Right? Can it do that reliably without hallucinating or how accurate?
They're rolling it out real soon. So
yeah, we'll find
the,
out.
The thing that Firefly.ai is the transcription service I'm using, and it puts action items at the bottom. And they were, again, it's because it's taking a data input and not extrapolating. It seemed to do a fairly good job. Like, if I were doing, I mean, for an average meeting where you don't need, you would never transcribe, you never pay for a transcriptionist, you never pay for someone to analyze it. Someone might post some notes somewhere. This becomes an incredible company tool if every meeting can wind up being searchable and have some extracted stuff from it that helps. I mean, I just think meetings are terrible to begin with, but having meetings and then having all the value lost because there's no way to harvest what was discussed except for people's imperfect note taking as it passes through the telephone game of office you know, stuff. Like just a transcript of everything could be helpful. I mean, it might also be bad. It could cause a lot of hurt feelings too. But
hey. Well, or if you missed an action item that was critical and it didn't know it was an action item. I mean, I guess it's figuring it out from the words you use or something. But anyway, I want to take a break because there is something we haven't addressed that is really the dirty little secret of all of this. And Microsoft didn't really address it either. I don't think they did, but Daniel Rubino's here from Windows Central. He will correct me if I'm wrong. Owen Thomas, always great to have you from the San Francisco Examiner. And we're going to keep putting pressure on you to bring Ditherati back because we love Ditherati. And while you're at it, bring back Yahoo Pipes and then everybody will be happy.
Yeah.
Glenn Fleischman. I miss Yahoo Pipes so much. I effing miss them. It was a great tool.
It's a thing. I think I am trying to think of a piece of technology that people have more nostalgia for than Yahoo Pipes, partly because it showed a lot of promise and then it was frozen for like 7 years before it died. So it never had a chance to decline. It just sat there in amber and everyone stared at it like a rare fossilized dinosaur bone or something.
Anyway, they killed it, so no point in mourning it. And you should probably learn Python because it's not coming back. Our show, anyway, great to have you too, Glenn Fleischman, for many, many points. But we will talk about your new book coming out with Marcin Witchery that you wrote called Shift Happens. It's imminent. It's imminent. And if you contributed to the Kickstarter, you'll hear some good news in just a bit. But first, a word from our sponsor. Worldwide Technology, WWT. We love WWT. Lisa and I went out there just before the pandemic broke, before lockdown, and we saw the amazing Advanced Technology Center. The ATC is at the heart of Worldwide Technology. It's a research and testing lab that brings together $500 million of equipment from the leading OEMs and emerging disruptors, all the companies that enterprises might be using to get business done. Why did they build this? Well, initially, so their engineers could spin up proofs of concept, could get to know products, could use them in the lab before rolling them out to customers. But there's now a really great feature to the ATC. You can use it too. The ATC offers hundreds of on-demand and schedulable labs featuring solutions that include technologies representing the latest advances in enterprise, everything from cloud to security to networking, primary and secondary storage, data analytics, absolutely AI. If you want to learn what the cutting edge on AI is, for instance, AI used for business intelligence, they've got it all in the labs, DevOps, Agile, so much more. WWT's engineers and partners use the ATC, but you can too. It'll cut your evaluation time from months to weeks. It'll introduce you to new ideas, new technologies. It'll help you do the thing you do best with technology that supports you. Before you go to market, you can access technical articles, expert insights, demonstration videos, white papers, of course, those hands-on labs, all the tools you need to stay up to date. And not only is it a physical lab space, but they've virtualized it, so you don't even have to go to St. Louis like we did to use the ATC platform. Anybody can access these amazing resources anywhere in the world, 365 days a year, at no cost to you. So while you're there, make sure to check out WWT's events and communities. We did a great panel event. It was so much fun. For more opportunities to learn about technology trends, to hear about the latest research and insights from their experts, we've sent Lou Maresca from This Week in Enterprise Tech out. He did a great keynote last year. Whatever your business needs, WWT can deliver scalable, tried and tested, tailored solutions to help you succeed in business. Because WWT understands business. They bring strategy and execution together to make that new world happen. To learn more about Worldwide Technology, the Advanced Technology Center, and to gain access to all those great free resources, it's simple. Just go to WWT.com/twit. WWT.com/twit. Create a free account on their platform, and you're in, man. And it is really a wonderful place. These are great people. WWT.com/twit. And by the way, please do us a favor and use the full URL so they know you saw it here. WWT.com/twit. So to me, the dirty little secret of all of this is it's hideously expensive. And right now it's being subsidized, right? By Microsoft. Yep. to gain a foothold into a new market. But that can't continue forever, Daniel.
No, of course not. It's going to be charged. And I've heard this from Microsoft off the record that, you know, which I shouldn't be probably saying, but like, it's obvious, right? They're going to charge us somehow that, who knows the mechanism for it. Likely, I would say Microsoft 365. They already have a subscription program that it can come through. You know, it'll start probably with enterprise since they have deep pockets and typically don't mind spending that. How that trickles down to consumers, there's, you know, Microsoft 365 there where you get a terabyte OneDrive, access to Office and all these other perks. You know, they could have another tier. It's an extra couple of dollars a month. But yeah, the economics. So I think there's two issues here. One, they're currently not charging for it simply because the value isn't there, right? A lot of the stuff we just talked about isn't here yet. So Copilot's not here yet. It's coming out maybe later this year. Same thing with Copilot for Office. So a lot of the stuff isn't here. So it'd be premature to charge people for it when you're not really getting a lot out of it. You know, you have the Bing chat. Okay, it's cool, but is that worth money? Probably not. They do have Bing Image Creator, and it does have, they call them boosts. And if you get the boost, it, you get a priority on the server and your image renders more quickly, because that's the issue here, right? So server time, the server load, and who gets access. If you pay for ChatGPT, that's one of the things you get primary access to the server. And it goes really fast at ChatGPT if you're paying for it. If you don't pay for it, yeah, you get that lag. So this will trickle down. I think they have time yet to, you know, make sure that there's actual value there that people will pay for. We're not there yet. But you're right. And the other thing they're doing too is they're putting a lot of emphasis on Azure and optimization. So they're really, really trying to, and they've been lowering costs internally on this stuff. And they're going to continue to push that and continue to expect that to happen. So that finally, I think when they do roll this out, it won't be even as expensive as it would be today if they were to do it there. But yeah, obviously they have to charge for this stuff. It is very expensive, a lot of server space.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about building it into Windows 11, and we've talked a lot about Windows Weekly, really being maybe that's what Windows 12 will be, is Windows with AI.
Right.
Then you have a billion people all of a sudden hammering your servers, plus the cost of building these large language models, which is steep. Even though Microsoft owns Azure, it still costs some money to run it. It's your sense. I don't want you to breach your NDA, but it's your sense that they are thinking about this and they think it's going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they already have a subscription plan for enterprise and consumers where they could just build these costs into it. I think the question right now is, what's the perceived value that people would pay?
Right.
How much would they
pay? You can't charge them
yet. Can they reduce? And you know, how much can they reduce the actual costs before rolling that out?
Glenn,
they're absolutely going to be doing
that. You've pinpointed a great use of it. How much would you have paid for that?
For
the transcription and the summaries. And
I'm paying Fireflies right now while I'm actively reporting. I'm paying it because I don't always have a big article like that,
right?
Where I have to do tons of interviews. I think it's $19 a month, and
that's,
they give you 8,000 minutes of uploads and unlimited Zoom.
I pay $20 for chats with the ChatGPT. Pay $20 to Midjourney, or maybe more. Actually, I think it's more like $60 for unlimited images. Do you think they make money on that? Or
I was wondering whether with the Fireflies, I'm thinking, what engine are they using? Maybe if it's proprietary, like, what's the computational load, storage load? It can't be. I mean, I don't know how many people are using a substantial amount of the process, but it can't be. I mean, you know, AWS services, Amazon services are incredibly cheap per minute. I just don't know. I can't conceptualize it, I guess. I don't know what you can run some of the models, you can download and run on a phone. I know phones are supercomputers now anyway, but legitimately, the fact that you can run some of this stuff in very low end hardware compared to what you can get at a data center makes me think that the computational cost must be relatively low, but it's not nothing when you multiply it by
tasks. It's like,
analyze a gigabyte of audio.
If I peg my CPU on an iPhone, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it multiply that by a million people on your servers. That's another matter entirely.
Yeah, I don't know what the growth is. It's a whole
Sam.
Seems like a
Sam Altman, the president and CEO of OpenAI, says it's about 10 times the cost of a Google search, a ChatGPT query. That's a lot more expensive.
I did see some fear from the same people who brought you a Palm Pilot uses a freezer's worth of electricity to operate based on very bad calculations. There's some moral panic that AI will, you know, use more than a Bitcoin's worth of
energy. Well, that's what I'm worried about. We got rid of, so we all figured out the crypto was really terrible for the environment. So all the crypto bros have now moved to AI bros, and they continue to burn CPU cycles like crazy. By the way, NVIDIA, how much did NVIDIA's stock price go up this week? They became almost a $1 trillion company. And I think a lot of that is because of Build.
Because they need their GPUs and everything for AI. Their position, and they do their own AI. So, like, you know, NVIDIA is positioned really well for the future. They're in automotive, they're in gaming, all these, they're in every growth category, basically.
Here's
and they've been releasing here's the products.
The 5-day trend. This is
well now
Wednesday, May 24th, right after the Microsoft keynote number two. I think that as I remember, they they went up, their market cap went up $200 billion. I think, as I remember,
it's kind of crazy that the GPU, which was this very kind of specialized niche thing, like mostly of interest to gamers or people who were like computer animators, has become this like really desirable computing commodity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Intel has badly missed that transition.
Kidding.
It's not the only transition that Intel missed, but
it's not that bad for Intel, but you're right about the GPU. I mean, for instance, the blurring of my background, I always talk about this is done by NVIDIA.
You use that NVIDIA technology, don't you? That's really good.
Yeah. So this is using the GPU real time to blur the background. It's also doing my voice in the sense that it filters out my background.
Plus, look away from us.
Oh, I didn't do the eye.
Do the eye trick.
Yeah, give me.
Last time you were on, you had eyes looking through your hand. No. We made the
okay,
thumbnail.
Now it's on.
Okay, Daniel
NVIDIA
cannot,
is worth.
He can't look away.
See, now I'm closing one eye. I'm trying to close one eye, and it
doesn't like it, huh?
He cannot look away.
It tries to make.
Okay. Yeah, he's trying.
If I'm looking down.
No eyes through your eyelids. It's gotten better. It actually, it's gotten better since the last time. Put your hand in front of your face. Let's see if it still does that. Oh, it's trying. Yeah, it's trying to look through your hand.
This is like a Luis Buñuel film suddenly.
Well, that's crazy. Yeah, I haven't tried that one before. But yeah, I mean, so NVIDIA is definitely positioned here. I will say that with Intel, don't forget, so, you know, we're talking about server costs and all that, and that's true, but there's the other half of this that's coming out, right? And it's already kind of about NPUs, right? Neural processing units. So you'll have localized processing.
Well, this was a big thing, by the way, at Build. I think Paul Theroux brought this up. A lot of the technologies they were talking about on device technologies require an NPU. Right now, only Qualcomm makes NPUs. It's going to be the fall before the Meteor Lake Intel processors with neural processing units come out. Of course, Apple's stuff all has NPUs now because they're using their own chips. Microsoft's going to be a little bit behind because of that. They've got to get NPUs out. I think just the Surface Go, right, or Surface X uses...
Surface Pro 9, the 5G version, because that's ARM. So that can do native background blurring, AI tracking, and all that kind of stuff, and that's NPU. Right now, we're relying on GPUs mostly to do that, and occasionally CPUs, fine, but it's brute forced. NPUs are hard-coded designed to handle AI. Intel does have theirs coming out, but yeah, you're right. Technically, right now, it's just Qualcomm, and they've been doing it for years because of smartphones. So.
Right, yeah.
I just want to point out that Qualcomm is... worth slightly more than Intel. They're both around $120 billion, but Qualcomm's a little more. AMD, which has long been the underdog runner-up to Intel, is worth $200 billion, and NVIDIA is worth $960 billion. They've been flirting with that $1 trillion
They're
mark.
Almost a trillion. I mean, it's can you imagine that?
Eight times as valuable as Intel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that might just be an overheated market, right? That's not necessarily what they really are worth. That's two. Their price to earnings. Their price to earnings is 202.
You know what?
That's a big ratio.
I think Warren Buffett said that the stock market in the short term is a popularity contest, right. And in the long run, it's a voting machine.
Right.
I mean, is any stock worth what it is? Well, yeah, because someone bought it and sold it at that price. But, you know,
that's a good point. It's not really tied to the return of the company. It's only tied to what people think is the return of the company.
Yeah.
You can tell when the time travelers show up, though, is they show up just before it does that, and they they buy calls on the stock. So if you watch for a lot of calls, then you can identify whether time travel exists. That's the
Intel's saving grace right now is their foundries. You know, that they build chips, and they're going to be building chips for other companies, right, including Qualcomm.
Right.
And that's their, I think their next big business move but their processors are catching up. I think they're positioned long term. They're going to do all right.
One of the stories that got buried because it wasn't an AI story, but you guys called it as one of the top five, and I agree. Windows 11 is getting cloud powered OS backup and restore, the kind of thing that we've got with an iPhone and you've got with your Android phone. Windows.
And we had with Windows 8.
What, really? This was a Windows 8 feature that disappeared, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of people are upset about that. Yeah, so it's a basic function, right, that when you say you get a new Windows 11 PC, you install it, you log into your account, and then the question is, all right, what are the apps I need to install? You know, and if you have a pretty previous Windows 11 device, this is just going to populate the stuff from the store on your start menu again, just like a smartphone would when you transfer your old
account
over.
That's awesome. Actually, that's a great feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty basic, you know, but yeah, Windows 8 used to have it, and then it got rid of it, and people have been wanting it back ever since. So,
That was a little palate cleanser in between AI stories. I just thought we'd throw that in just to refresh your palate. Actually, I think really this whole ARM thing is interesting because Windows on ARM historically has kind of not been great. I found it's getting better and better. I've started using it on my Mac in emulation. Emulation in VM. Well, it is emulation, I guess. In
Hypervisor.
Hypervisor. It's VMware. It's Parallels. And it actually runs great. It really runs. Yeah. It's very snappy. Is Microsoft going to... How important is ARM to Microsoft?
Very important, but don't forget, Apple has a different strategy. Apple is like, we're switching from x86 to ARM. And we're just going to throw that switch and everybody has to come over to it. And because they can do that, they were in just a better position long term with their chips. Microsoft will support ARM, but we're going to keep x86 around. And that's, two different strategies. And so they're getting there. Windows 11 is much more optimized for ARM than Windows 10 was. And Windows 12 will be even more of that. At Build, we saw them bring over Unity's now on ARM and a bunch of other tools that are needed for developers to build apps, right? If you're doing a basic app right now, you can do it in ARM, not a problem. And you can even do hybrid apps now, x86 and ARM. But the problem is when you have very complicated apps that rely on other libraries, and those libraries don't support ARM,
right?
You know, it's a problem. And so that's been the journey there. Combined with Qualcomm's chips haven't been that impressive. They've been getting better, but they've always been like compared to what last gen Intel has done. The big thing now we're expecting is, of course, the Nuvia chips, what are called the Onyx processors. I expect those to be debut later this year in the sense that they'll premiere them, they'll talk about them, the architecture, the processing speeds. I don't think we'll see them ship until at least summer 2024, maybe even fall 2024. So we're still far out. But according to Qualcomm, they've had a lot of design wins, meaning a lot of OEMs are committed to building laptops and devices around these chips more so than any other. In fact, Qualcomm says 2024 will be the pivot point for Windows on ARM. That's going to be where we're going to really start to see it take off. Will that happen? Will Onyx deliver? I think it's a tough challenge, especially a Gen 1 chip. But it is the ex-Apple engineers, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. A guy left, who was instrumental in the design of the Apple chips, left Apple, founded Nuvia. Apple sued him. He countersued. Yeah. I think those suits have been dropped because he took a lot of employees with him to Nuvia, and then Qualcomm bought him. And so that's how Qualcomm kind of got into the race. It's interesting because when Apple came out with these Apple Silicon chips, they were performant, they were low power, they had NPUs built in, they had integrated memory. It looked like they had kind of leapfrogged the PC industry. And I imagine that all of this is in response to that,
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, so I put up that story later about so Microsoft's been hiring people to build.
Stop being ridiculous. Microsoft is not building its own processor. So knock it off.
Windows fans have this weird fantasy that Microsoft is just going to build an ARM processor. It's going to come out the gate, Gen 1. It's going to blow everybody away. And that's going to be the end of it. And it's less like, that's not how any of this works. Yeah, Apple came out with the M1, but it took them 10 years.
10 years. To get to the M1. Yeah.
They were doing it for a very long time, and they had a lot of devices to test it on and scale. Microsoft does not have an A4 processor to start with to build up to an M1.
Apple was putting these out on the iPhone for years.
Yeah. So I think there's some truth to this in this sense that I do believe Microsoft experiments with chips and chip design. I think that's actually publicly known that they've done that. They've done it with, for server chips and have explored that. They have people working on it. They build their own co-processors. That's public knowledge. They have them in the Surface device. So they do, and they use them in HoloLens. They use them in Xbox. So they do build microprocessors, but they don't do it at the scale of like what Apple is doing. That said, I wouldn't be surprised that back in 2019 and 20, that they were, looking into this, which is where the Bloomberg story came out saying that Microsoft was looking to build its own processors to use in Azure, and they may trickle down to Surface devices. I think what happened, though, was they were hedging their bets if Qualcomm wasn't up to the task of Windows and committing to it, or they were going back out of that market. So I think, but then what happened was Qualcomm in 2021 bought Nuvia for $1.4 billion. I think they did that because it was a strategic decision, but it was also sending a message to Microsoft. Hey, we're serious. We're committing to this. And I think Microsoft was, okay, why would we need to build our own chip at this point when we're going to get it from these people? It doesn't make sense for Apple to make their own processor.
Microsoft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although if they did, it should go in this beautiful Cooler Master Sneaker X computer. That is.
I don't get this stuff.
That's a case mod. But... It's only $6,000.
$3,000 over the cost of the parts for it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely the case. You're paying for the case. I'd like to. They should put this next to though a screen or a person or something. Because how big is
scale?
That? Yeah, I don't know. Is it actually sneaker size? I don't know. No. It is not. It's a giant sneaker. All right. Let's take a little break. And then, Owen, I'm going to get you back in the conversation because the Surgeon General has told us social media is bad for kids. And
I'm shocked.
Owen, it's great to have Owen Thomas here from The Examiner. Of course, our great friend Glenn Fleischman from The Incomparable and his new book, Shift Happens. We'll tell you about that. Glenn.fun is his website. And, of course, Daniel Rubino, editor-in-chief of Windows Central. Great panel. Our show today brought to you by, look out, business has changed, right? I mean, the pandemic changed how we work. People don't necessarily have to be at the office these days. Boundaries to where we work or even how we work have disappeared. But if you are in charge of protecting your company's data, that's scary. Business has changed and your data is always on the move. Whether it's on a device, in the cloud, across networks, at the local coffee shop, your employees love it. Users love it. But it's a challenge for IT security. That's why you need Lookout. Lookout helps you control your data and free your workforce. It's possible to have both. With Lookout, you'll gain complete visibility into all your data so you can minimize risk from external and internal threats. And very importantly, ensure compliance. By seamlessly securing hybrid work, your organization doesn't have to sacrifice productivity or even employee satisfaction for security. Lookout makes IT's job easier too. You know, with IT security, these days, you might have multiple solutions, none of which work together. You're trying to get it all working, and you're spending way too many cycles getting the tools to work together. and too little time on keeping secure. Lookout solves that. It's a single unified platform that reduces IT complexity so you can focus those cycles, those brain cells, on the things you need to, whatever comes your way. Good data protection. It does not have to be a cage. It could be a springboard letting you and your organization leap toward a future of your making. Visit lookout.com today and learn how to safeguard data, secure hybrid work, reduce IT complexity. Lookout.com. Lookout. Thank you, Lookout, for supporting This Week in Tech. Thanks to all of you for supporting it. We had a great week. We put together a little video for you to watch.
All right. Well, it's certainly an incredible honor to have Governor DeSantis make this stark announcement.
What the hell?
What the hell is that?
Please wait.
Previously on Twit, AI News. I mean, Twit News.
Next, we're it's bringing not up to date. The Copilot to the biggest canvas of all, Windows.
Look at that. Now just I mean, it looks like a command line.
I click on that, and now we'll pop up the Windows Copilot on the right.
I always wanted to make that right sidebar do something.
Just like the Bing chat.
All about AI. I mean, Android.
We've got Matthew McCullough and Jamal Eason from the developer team at Google talking all about how AI integrates with their developer tools, makes things easier for developers.
We can recognize code. We can recognize dependencies and imports. Many times you find a code sub online, it's like, well, how do I get this into our project? Like, how do I find the right dependencies? How's that going to build? How's that going to compile? We thought about those things.
This Week in AI. I mean, Google.
Our special guest, Chris Messina, the inventor of the hashtag and discoverer of so many amazing technologies.
Kids coming up now who are in school, who are learning to work with ChatGPT, will have a completely different set of assumptions about what the interaction paradigm should be when they pick up a device.
AI Leo says, because we are living in a generative world, and I'm a generative girl.
Oh,
this
please.
Is my world. My world.
He can. This really so they've got this AI Leo, and they can make it say anything. That wasn't me. That was AI Leo. I'm living in a generative world. Please. Holy cow.
I would never expect a Madonna reference from you, Ian, if I'm honest.
Oh, come on. What about Taylor Swift? You know I'm a Swiftie.
Oh, yeah. That I can see.
Okay.
That I can see.
Surgeon General has warned that Taylor Swift may harm children and adolescents. Wait a minute. No, sorry. Social media. Although, Surgeon General, there are things in this world that could harm them much worse than spending a little time on Instagram. Dr. Vivek Murthy cited a profound risk of harm to adolescent mental health and urged families to freak out. No, to set limits. Okay. And governments to set tougher standards for use. He is the Surgeon General, and I guess he's supposed to warn us about things like this. Seems like there are worse things in this world.
Well, this also seems like 10 years too late. I mean, it was years ago that a leak revealed that Facebook's own researchers had found that social media harmed adolescents. I mean, Facebook knew this and did nothing. So I think there's a lot to be said for it's time for government to step in, because the companies are, you know, it's not like they're ignorant of the problem. They're fully aware of the problem. They don't seem to care. They don't seem to be willing to take the steps that might, you know, cost them money.
Well, they shouldn't. I mean, this is their business. They're never going to admit, oh, yeah, we're the... It's like fentanyl saying, yeah, I'm the problem. It's not going to admit it.
A Taylor Swift reference.
Yes.
Facebook looking in the mirror and saying, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me.
I'm the problem. I don't know if government is the right tool to fix this. Montana has signed a bill banning TikTok starting on January 1st. Is that the right answer?
Well, that's, you know, that has nothing to do with protecting children, right? It's about performative geopolitics at a state level scale, which makes no sense given that our union, you know, cedes foreign relations to the federal government.
Right.
Montana should not be in this business, and it almost certainly violates the free speech rights of TikTok users in Montana.
TikTok creators and TikTok itself have both sued. It will, I mean, on First Amendment grounds alone, it'll probably get thrown out. Nevertheless, there are a lot of people that think TikTok is a, you know, a
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, the question of whether a state should have the authority to ban an app is
right.
separate from, is that app actively harming people? I also, you know, I also think that, like, humans are our own worst enemies. We will find ways to hurt each other, whether it's in person, in writing. You know, the founding fathers used to, like, rip each other, you know, rip each other apart in, like, pamphlets that they circulated. If you've, you know, if you've watched Hamilton, you know a little bit about this. But to the point, I mean, aside from being a decade too late, I think there is a lot of value here to the Surgeon General, even, you know, even if it doesn't lead to regulation, just saying this is a real problem. The flip side is that this horse is out of the barn. Teens are going to use social media. What we need to do is adapt to it and, figure out how to, you know, figure out how to get our, you know, our youth, like, in a healthy place where they can be on social media, know how to take it with a certain lightness and grace, and also behave appropriately, because, you know, a lot of the problem is, you know, teens bullying other teens. You know, it's mean girls on, yeah. on, you know, internet, you know, on internet steroids.
I have to point out the number one cause of death among children and adolescents in the United States is firearms. They're not doing anything about that.
I think the Surgeon General put out a warning about firearms a long time ago.
Well, but firearms will kill you, so be careful. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, about children, this is actually, it's a public health disaster. Firearms fall into that category. There's been a lot of efforts at state and federal level to declare it that. And it's funny, the social media thing might fall in the same category where it's like, yeah, we all think, or not we all, but a significant number of people think it's a bad idea to allow unfettered access. But firearms is a different issue in that regard. But how do you provide it with the, how do you not do it something that violates the Constitution, whether or not you support the full range of it in the Second Amendment or really want it in the First Amendment?
Well, I guess you're right. TikTok is not protected by the Constitution, but the First Amendment does kind of cover this whole thing.
Corporate, I mean, this is the double-edged sword of giving corporate free speech rights, is that corporations have expanded rights than they would have 20 to 50 years ago that allow them to defend themselves. In that way, it's when it's ironic when free speech maximalists are saying that corporations like Disney can't say what they want to say. It's sort of a funny thing. I mean, I guess it's always you don't need a freedom from repercussion is not what the First Amendment says. It's the freedom from government intervention in your right to have speech. But I don't know. I mean, we kept our kids off devices. They did not have full-time devices until they were in their early teens, and they didn't have access to devices overnight. And we set limits.
That's probably a good idea.
Contract yeah. with them that schools had suggested about usage, yeah. and a couple times they're like, "Oh, I set up an Instagram account without telling you." We're like, "All right, well, we're going to disable it, but we're not going to, you know, you tell what's fine." And so now, of course, when I got off Twitter, they both got on, both my 16-year-old and 18-year-old, just for the lulls. But they're mature enough to deal with it because they laugh at Twitter as opposed to are sucked into its dramas.
I would point out that there's an interesting new legal avenue for kind of you know, like holding social media companies accountable for their actions. And it's, you know, it's not free speech because that's pretty cut and dried. And it's not Section 230 because that's proved very tricky to kind of take apart. And Mike Masnick, among others, has laid out a very strong argument for why you don't want to, you know, take apart Section 230 to just to go after social media companies. But product liability has been an interesting kind of legal tactic. Snap, for example, was found liable, I believe. I'm not sure if this was a final ruling, but in some early rulings in a case, Snap was found liable for creating a filter that lets you post how fast you were going when you took a snap.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I used that on the bullet train in Japan. But also, yeah, a number of people used it while they were driving.
Yes. And it, you know, the plaintiff's lawyers argued that this encouraged people to speed, to kind of show off. And I think that, you know, I think that this could be, you know, it could actually be a valuable corrective for people to pursue product liability claims against these social media companies to say,
Snap, by the way, discontinued that filter and probably would have even with absent a court case. I mean, I think these companies try. Snap does. I know. They try to be good citizens.
Well, I think, should it have existed in the first place? Should, well, you know, I think that
mistakes happen.
Well, Kara Swisher talks about how Facebook showed them, you know, their live video broadcasting features. And, you know, she said, you know, someone is going to shoot someone live on this. Right. And they said, what are you talking about? That's, you know, like they didn't, it wasn't even conceivable to them.
Of course, she was right.
She was absolutely right.
Yeah. Jeff Jarvis, I'm going to channel our host from This Week in Google, posted this text from the Surgeon General 51 years ago. All the available statistics confirm the pervasive role television plays in the United States, if not throughout the world. More people own television sets and more people watch television than make use of any other single form of mass communication. The question of violence on television has been one issue that was raised almost immediately after television became a major contender. Warning about television. After that, they warned about video games, violent video games. There's always been a new cultural phenomenon that we old people look at and say, you kids and your rock and roll, it's rotting your mind.
It reminds me of the Pessimist Archive. That's all they do. They show a lot of that where they... they'll show how books were going to take down society.
Yeah.
Then it was radio. Then it was the bicycle. Yeah. So there is a certain irony here that, and we need to be careful that, we're just now overreacting to what's new. But I think social media is clearly different in some ways, right? The fact that it instantly accesses millions of people and its ability to spread disinformation or violence. You know, there was, I even hate talking about the story a couple of weeks ago with the torture video, animal torture videos on Twitter. They took down their,
and no kid should ever see that. That's horrific.
Right. I mean,
that's worse than porn.
Just reading about it, I had like PTSD for days.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Yeah.
Just reading about it wasn't so disturbing. Yes. I couldn't imagine children who saw that stuff. And it's like, what do you do about that? Especially since currently, you know, with Elon, you know, I hate that we keep picking on him, but he has no reaction to this, right? There doesn't seem to be a concern. And then you have like with the Republicans, it's like you have free speech and you can do whatever you want, but then TikTok's Chinese, so maybe we should ban it.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, it's all over the place. And I don't, and meanwhile though, and to be fair, in China, what do? Right. They ban social media. They don't let the kids on stuff. They are limited to gaming just for a couple hours a week. And they force the kids to learn stuff. And so their children are all like, you know, focus, education, engineering. And our kids are just like on social media all the time. I mean, TikTok's not even in China. I always thought that was interesting.
Well, they have their own version of it. Yeah. Yeah.
But TikTok is for the rest of the world, right? So it's sort of like, it's a fascinating thing. I don't, you know, we had the First Amendment, so you can't just ban stuff. But
well, we should ban candy because it rots your teeth.
Right.
Hell yeah. No candy allowed.
You know, like as mayor of New York, Mike Bloomberg pushed the.
He didn't want bottles.
Sugary beverage tax.
Here, by the way, thank you for referencing, for name checking the Pessimist Archive, Daniel. This is fantastic. Look at this one. Teddy Bears Doom Race. The teddy bear is a, not kidding, 1907. The teddy bear is a social menace, an aider and abettor of race suicide. I mean, we've always had this moral panic. I'm going to send this site to Jeff Jarvis. This is fantastic. Everything. Here's, you know, comic books. Oh, my God. Good books called The Answer to Comic Book Addiction. Kids Today. Evil Communications. Comic books give tots bad habits. From 1949. And on and on and on. This is a great website.
I don't think there's any bad media. I think it's just bad parenting. There's my statement.
That's true too, right?
I mean, I'm being evil by saying that, but
it's reasonable, I guess. If there's a hazard to all children that parents, you know, maybe having trouble dealing with, that the government could step in. You know, you want to make sure you label Tylenol not appropriate for children under a certain age. I don't know. I literally have a friend who lost her daughter to Tylenol overdose. Wow. I mean, it's a deadly
It's a terrible,
deadly medicine. So
the parenting thing is true, but it's such a complicated issue, right? Because now, like when I grew up in the 80s, like I had a mom at home for a while. Like parents were allowed to parent their kids. Now everybody's so busy and, you know, there's so much going on. Like even like everybody, both parents have to often work. It's like, it's very hard for parents to be true parents in that sense. So I don't know what to, they can do that. They can handle all this.
I don't know how women have survived the telephone. This is from 1917. Two talking machines, a woman and a telephone, are to blame for soused husbands and $4 potatoes. That's the explanation for wrecked homes and the high cost of living being given out by Mrs. John C. Bly, president of the Housewives League. So there you go. There's the problem, the telephone. I don't know. I make light of this. This is a great site. I could go on. I make light of this. It bothers me that the Surgeon General, thank God he's not the Attorney General, is focusing on this when there are so many other hazards to young people. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Well, we can do more than,
we can do more than one. I agree. Yeah. I agree. But I think it's overstating the case to say, for instance, the mental health issues in young women in America today are due to Instagram and Facebook. I mean, that seems a stretch to me.
Well, it's like accelerants are always a problem and they're hard to measure
because
for some people it has no effect and other people, it can be a devastating thing that they wouldn't otherwise have encountered. And so the question is the greater exposure to things that otherwise someone might not have seen, is that worse than in real life? If the internet didn't exist, would they be facing the same hazards at this time? You can't really do an A/B test on that. I mean, we talked to our children, frankly, about drugs, and it's like, we're like, look, fentanyl is a different category. So, Instagram and Facebook didn't exist when we were children, neither did fentanyl in this variety. And it's like, fentanyl is destroying people and killing people. True. And it's not like pot or even, it's not even like heroin. It's not even like other of these super hard drugs when we were kids, some of which were circulating around. I knew people who were engaged with. It's like fentanyl is a whole new thing. So how do you respond to fentanyl? I think there is a little bit, not that Facebook is fentanyl, but it's like there is a little bit of that. Like, well, it's a million times more powerful than the telephone.
Than a comic book.
And it's free and your parents don't want you to do it. So
I think you did the very sensible thing. And we used to do that. We turn off the router at 10 p.m. Because kids will, if they are, it's addictive. I'll stay up all night if I start looking at Instagram. I can see doom scrolling and all that. And, there's certain things you can do. Fortunately, my kids are a little bit older. I didn't have the same problems. Dr. Murthy has also decried the public health crisis of loneliness, isolation, and the lack of connection in our country. I think that's true. I don't know if it's government's job to fix it, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, well, I think just highlighting it is important.
Yeah,
Professor Galloway, Scott, he talks about this all the time, and I think it's true. Between the pandemic and the changing social structures, and how men is being perceived, like there's a lot of moving parts here. And I take it for granted. I love working from home. I love being an introvert, being a shut in. But I'm also in my 40s. I've done my time.
Right.
I wasn't like that in my teens and 20s. But if you're in your teens and 20s, those are formative years to build these skills out. And if you're not getting them, it's like it can cause a lot of problems. And there's that issue with, and I forgot the name already, but they have it in Japan with
Pillow brides.
it's called like, I forgot the name of it, but there's a name for it.
They don't leave the house.
They pull out of society basically, and that's starting to happen here for different reasons. There's changing, and now you have steroid use going up in young men because of now it's like body image stuff going on with men too, because everybody wants to, they go on Instagram and they see all these guys who are jacked, and it's just like there's a lot of stuff that's going on, which is why I'm not a parent, by the way. Because even I'm like, I don't know how I would handle this stuff either. I think it's very complicated.
It's called,
and by the way, AI is making.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. AI is making all of that worse, right? All of the filters.
AI makes everything worse. Everything. It's called, and everything better too. At the same time, it's so amazing. Yeah. It's like blockchain.
Listen, if I want to go on Instagram and see somebody who's jacked, I just go on and look at Owen Wilson. I mean, come on. I mean, Owen Thomas. Sorry.
Owen Wilson.
I had that joke all prepped and I still misdelivered.
It's called hikikomori, a Japanese culture-bound syndrome of social withdrawal. This is an article from the National Institutes of Health recommending it be added to the DSM, the Diagnostic Manual for a Mental Illness. Is it a new psychiatric disorder? I don't know. Next week, we'll talk. I thought I would with you, Glenn, talk about what Apple's going to do a week from Monday. But I guess we'll do that next Sunday. That's going
to
be...
I might lose my bet. I may have to eat a hat.
You think that Apple is not going to release a VR helmet or what?
Well, my argument was I didn't think they were going to release one as a product that would ship this year for a reasonable sum of money. But I thought it's possible they'd do a developer release that would be anchored to a computer and only available to developers and in limited quantities. And so I think I'm right about that second part. But all the word that's coming out from people who seem to know birdies inside the company, which only happens when things are getting actually close to being released, that this information comes out. Seems like Apple will be ready to ship it this year as a consumer product. I still think it's ridiculous. I don't see how they're going to make it work, but I could very well be
so
wrong.
Get this on record exactly right. You're not saying they won't announce something. You're not saying it won't be a developer product. You just don't think it will ship as a consumer product in 2023.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be out this year. It just doesn't seem right from like
who would buy it is what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, that and physics and hardware and what's developed for it. I don't think that developers get the thing. If Apple announces in June, even if they're ready to ship a developer test version, which they've done for multiple previous products in major transitions over time, then it's one thing to port software, you know, across generations of Intel hardware, Intel to M1 or whatever. Those things have happened before. It's another to develop stuff that's entirely new and compelling in an AR, VR environment. And I just don't think there's time to make it happen.
But yeah.
I also just don't think the hardware could exist the way it's described. It's either ridiculous if they're going to ship what's being described widely. Sounds like an absurd Homer Simpson's car to me. And if it's not that, I don't think the technology exists to make a thing that won't be like that. So
I'm not betting against
ready
you.
Ready to be wrong.
I am not betting against you. I think you might be wrong, but not because you're not right. You're wrong because Apple's executives have put so much wood in those arrows that they can't pull back at this point. So even though you're absolutely right, Apple should not do this. They're going to do it. And I think it's going to be the worst product mistake Apple has ever made in its history. I mean, it's going to be... Bad.
Wow, bigger than the Newton?
The Newton wasn't a mistake. I got four of them right there. The Newton was ahead of its time.
Yeah.
No, the Newton, you could reasonably say we wouldn't have the iPhone except for the Newton. Like, the Newton was a precursor. Maybe this will be the Newton for what is to come in AR.
That's my reaction keeps being, if what I keep reading about being described is what were to ship, it seems like a complete failure. So I can't believe what they're going to ship will be what I keep reading about, in which case they have to violate the laws of physics, or they just have some really clever hardware innovation we haven't seen before that is going to wow people. And I'm willing to be wrong about that because I don't know. I'm not in chip factories in China and across the US and in Germany or something looking at what's being made. So it's plausible that it's going to be something that's going to be extraordinary, and I'm just not ready for it. The future shock will hit me then.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I'm just trying to find the sales figures for the Newton. So that's the only question. Will it be a bigger flop than the Newton? I like that.
I owned an Apple Cube. I owned a G4 Cube.
Oh, I bought the Cube on the last day. I got it home, and the news came out they were discontinuing it.
The question is, do you think they're going to talk about AI? Because they've been so quiet about any of that.
Yeah.
Like,
hope so.
And to me, that's the weirdest part of this. It's like, if they're doing AR, VR, it's like, all right. But everybody else is just like, no, we're switching positions now on that. That's last year's fad. We're moving on. Where AI is the new thing. And here's Apple, like, we're going to do AR, VR. Either they're geniuses and really figured this out, like, you know, what Glenn is kind of alluding to, maybe. Or, this could be just a really big error in terms of guidance.
I think it's going to be a huge error. I really do.
They have the neural cores. They've been making chips with multiple cores. I mean, I like Apple's approach. They've done a lot of machine learning stuff that is not very flashy, but works actually quite well. That's the device to device and end to end encrypted and relies on, in some cases, dedicated cores. Like Apple added, OCR to Photos library. So every piece of text now I can search on it. That's extraordinary. It's an incredible improvement, and it's so quiet. Most people don't know they did it because they want it just to be something that's emergent when you search, and you just there's more things
that will be maybe Tim Cook. That would be an interesting attack to take. Tim Cook comes out and says, we don't think AI is ready. We don't think it's safe. We think it should be incorporated into existing products in a way that's safe, reliable, and private. And that's what we do as the privacy company. Meanwhile, casting shade on Google and Microsoft as not caring one bit about your privacy or accuracy. Yeah. The Newton, according to Ars Technica, sold an estimated 200,000 units. Well, now, it's interesting because Apple's saying they expect to sell 100,000 of these nerd helmets. So maybe Apple really is, in their mind, thinking this is our Newton. And we will. How long was it after the Newton came out that came out with the iPhone?
The Newton, was it like 12, 15 years?
Yeah. It's quite a while. 1997 to 2007. Yeah. So it's exactly 10 years. Period. Yeah. Interesting. So it might be, that might be accurate. They might be saying in 10 years we'll have the AR device, the equivalent of the iPhone to the Newton.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? I actually have a little soft spot in my heart for the Newton. If this is a Newton, that wouldn't be so bad. Yeah, that wouldn't be so bad. But and by the way, let's not forget that one of the outcomes of Newton was the ARM processor. Which was the processor used in the Newton. Apple bought or actually founded ARM based on the Acorn RISC machine, ARM. And eventually sold off their stake. But there would be no ARM without Newton.
Forgot about that. That's
so
good.
These early, and Apple, I think Tim Cook is very aware of Apple history and the lessons learned. It might very well be that's how they think of this. You've given me a new perspective on this. So it's not that you're wrong. You're just not right.
I appreciate it. It's very Stephen Colbert-ish. You're so wrong. I mean, why are you right?
You're not right.
My analysis is correct and the patient is dead, but the patient should be alive according to my calculations.
According to my careful calculations. I'm glad that y'all decided to come out and play today. That's what I'm going to say, even though you really didn't have to leave your homes. Owen Thomas, San Francisco Examiner, bring back Ditherati. Love you. It's great to see you. And please give your favorite furry Alex a hug. No, I'm sorry. You're his daddy. I'm sorry. Let's get that right. No, I'm just teasing. I like to tease Alex. You know, he lives in my boyhood home. Have I mentioned that? How many times have I mentioned that?
That's hilarious.
You didn't know that?
Is there a plaque?
In Providence?
In Providence, Rhode Island.
That house.
That same house.
That is freaky.
We found out it was a complete coincidence. His fiance at the time, now wife, Liza, was out visiting, and she was doing her residency at Brown. I said, oh, I used to live in Providence. She said, oh, yeah, I grew up there. Where'd you live? I said, well, I told her the street. She said, oh, yeah, what number? And I told her the number. She said, yeah, that's my house.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Crazy. They gave me a tour last time I was out there. Anyway.
That's amazing.
Is there a velvet rope in front of your bedroom?
So there is a plaque. Yes, there is a plaque. Leo Laporte slept here. They've done a nice job. They fixed it up. It's beautiful. Yeah. But I did visit my old bedroom.
That's great.
Yeah. And it hasn't changed that much. It's kind of a strange experience. That is Glenn Fleischman. We've got to give a plug to Shift Happens. Is it too late to get a copy?
No, you can still get it. Go to shifthappens.site. There's a site that lets you pre-order. We have set the order, the number of books that will ever be printed, probably. Because it's a big project. And then the printer said, got to order paper because there's still a little bit of paper shortage.
Oh, dear.
So, and this is it's ultimately 1,300 and I lost track, 1,376 pages across three volumes. It's a lot of paper. So they got to go and, talk to the mills, and the mills are still doing literally rationing. Like, the printers can't order more than a certain amount each month of certain kinds of stock. So
wow, it's, and this is going to be a full color, beautiful, you're probably thing. Using really good paper, I would imagine.
Hardcover, yeah. The paper is very nice. Very nice paper. Spent a lot of time looking at papers, let me tell you. A lot of work. But, yeah, so we're going out. We got to go out and go on press. We'll be actually at the printers in Lewiston, Maine in July, watching sheets come off. And every hour and a half for at least a week, maybe 2 weeks, we'll be there 16 hours a day as they bring sheets off and go, how do you like this sheet? We go, oh, it looks okay. Or maybe you need to fix that. Color patch isn't perfect. Whatever.
That's really awesome that you're doing that, I think. That's really fantastic.
It's going to be a lot of work, but it's going to be perfect. And if you give it, I mean, the printers are good. If you let them do it, they'll do it right. It's very digital end-to-end process for analog things. Lots of color checking and so forth that happens all in line with the equipment, so they keep it on target. But still, this is a high-touch book, as they say. So we're going to...
And if you are in New England, you should go visit the Museum of Printing on Saturday, July 8th. Glenn will be there along with Martian, Doug Wilson, the director of a film about linotype, and some guy named Jeff Jarvis to talk about keyboards, typewriters, and the linotype. This will be...
Yes.
I want to just go and see the nerds that show up, to be honest with you.
It'll be great. It'll be great. Look, I sometimes go to conventions, Ways Geese, old term, and hundreds of people go to like an old printing factory or a museum, and we all talk about printing or letterpress or type or whatever. It's a lot of fun.
It's your goal?
Every field...
It's your goal to devote your life to this subject.
It's kind of accidental, but I love it. And, I joked at one point I was collecting obsolete professions because I was trained as a typesetter in the 80s, and then I went into journalism. So, maybe historian might be, I don't know, have a little more staying power. We'll find out. I don't sure.
So I didn't realize that. So you, because you'd been a typesetter, you kind of came to this honestly.
It was a high school job. And then when I was in college, I worked as a typesetter and always had kind of a, interesting. It's printing history is the history of how we communicate, right? And there's this whole, the 1800s, we went from being a low information society in some ways to a high because of improvements in printing allowed the rapid transformation of, news from what happened into newspapers. And it's an incredible thing. So I'm kind of studying aspects of that that are very obscure.
Awesome. Shift happens. Site. I think the time to buy, get this before it's out of print because it will be the one and only, and you will have something.
Laser.
What was that?
I love that shot. That's a laser. It's a guy, one of the people who is responsible for the invention of the laser. He co-won a Nobel Prize for it. Also decided there should be a laser typo eraser, and he actually made a model, brought it on the air. It's Shandlo. I'm liking his name. He went on the air with Walter Cronkite and demoed it, and you just zap it because the ink would vaporize and the paper wouldn't get as hot. And he thought this could be miniaturized and just built into typewriters, and you just have, you hit it and go,
Wow.
Sadly, the correcting Selectric was invented instead. Yes. And
Mike Nesmith's mom came along with whiteout.
Yes.
And,
very good.
And then eventually computers, and you didn't use typewriter.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, there's a technology that lasted 100 years and then just disappeared. It's over.
Like buggy whips.
Yeah, like buggy whips. Thank you, Glenn. Always great to see you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be
Glenn.
Here.
Glenn.fun is two N's in Glenn, GLENN.fun. Thank you, Daniel Rubino, Editor-in-Chief of Windows Central. Great coverage on Build. There was a lot more we didn't get to. Build was, I think, really interesting this year. And Microsoft's
first time in a long time.
Yeah, just fascinating. So I really appreciate you coming and filling us in on the best stuff. Thank you, Daniel, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it.
And now I'm excited about that book. That book looks amazing.
Isn't it beautiful? What a work of art you've created, Glenn. Incredible.
I'm just a project manager. I give all credit to Martin, who is the designer. He took a lot of the pictures in it. He found the photos. He contacted people all over the world to take pictures of obscure typewriters and terminals. But it's about half photos, also one of the selling points.
I'm gonna pick one up right now. I should have ordered it before. We've been talking about it all this time, and I just put it off. I'm
someday ready. A collector's item, possibly, because we're not going to print the thing again. It's a huge, it's a huge undertaking. It's so much work.
I can see that. Yeah.
Might not ever go back.
Well, and I think we should have one on our, in our studio, honestly. I think that's a great piece of history. So thank you for that. Ladies and gentlemen, we do Twit every Sunday afternoon. I'm glad you were here for this episode. You can watch us live if you want. The live stream is at live.twit.tv. There's audio and video. We get started around 2 p.m. Pacific, right after Ask the Tech Guys. And we end usually around 5 or 6 p.m. We're ending a little early tonight because this is the last episode of Succession. And I have to put on my dark suit, my funeral suit, and watch it. I'm very sad about that. Don't get me started. Anyway, we're glad you're here. 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific. That's 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. After the fact, you can get on-demand versions of the show ad-supported at twit.tv, our website. And when you're there, you'll see a link to YouTube. There's a YouTube channel devoted to This Week in Tech. You'll also see links to podcast players, so you can subscribe in them, and an RSS feed, because you can basically any podcast player, search for Twit, you'll find it right away. Subscribe to all our shows. We have a lot of great shows. Now, if you are a Club Twit member, don't forget, you have your own feeds. Those are the ad-free versions of the feeds. When you subscribe to Club Twit, we send you an email with links to all the shows, the ad-free versions. We send you a Discord invite so you can join us in our Discord chat room. We send you information about the Twit Plus feed, which has shows we don't put out anywhere else, like Hands on Macintosh with Micah Sargent, Paul Thurrott's Hands on Windows. We brought back Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks. That's a wonderful show, This Week in Space, and on and on and on. So Club Twit members, $7 a month. It supports us. We appreciate it. If you can just take a little bit of money out of your Shift Happens funds and send that to us, we will be very glad to welcome you into the club. twit.tv/clubtwit. And we are very grateful to all of our Club Twit members for making this possible. That's it for This Week in Tech. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.